lot of blame for this.
Oh, yeah.
And I know I'll hear from them for this, but throwing God off successfully with the help of the federal court system, throwing God out of the public square, out of the schools, the abortionists have got to bear some burden for this, because God will not be mocked, and when we destroy 40 million little innocent babies, we make God mad. I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Today that feels fantastic. I can't quite put my finger on it. I can't quite figure out what it is. There's just something in the air that puts a smile on my face, a spring in my step, a dip in my hip. The air smells a little sweeter. The birds are singing a little louder. The sun is shining a little brighter. That's when you put things in God's hands. Somebody hit the smite button. All right. Fantastic to be here today. And I mean, for those of us who are still here, planet feels a little lighter somehow. Feels like we're one fat bastard lighter today. Why, hello. It's 3 minutes and 18 seconds. I will miss his support for segregation and apartheid, though. Those will be sorely missed by those in the Christian community. And his guidance on the purple Teletubby matter, I'll miss that as well. God bless him.
I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. He was a man of God. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Why, hello. It's 3 minutes and 48 seconds after the hour of 11 in this month of May, in the year of our Lord, 2007. My Lord, which is beaten into me every single day. People have asked me why I say that, but that was a thing that was beaten into us every day at Our Lady of Perpetual, whatever it was that I went to school at. So it's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. It is Tuesday, and welcome to Day 12. 503-733-2970. If you'd like to join us, make it part of your day telephonically speaking, you can do that. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email us if you'd like to engage with us in a binary fashion with your comments, your clarifications, your kvetches, your random statements of praise for the occasional acts of decency and goodness by a kind and benevolent God. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick@rickemerson.com or 503-733-2970. You know what? I didn't have time to dig up. You know, because he didn't... You know, if he really cared, he would have died like about an hour earlier. Or at least they would have found him. Was he just sitting at his desk?
They found him unresponsive in his office at 10:45 a.m. Eastern Time, taken to Lynchburg Hospital.
Lynchburg. How appropriate that Jerry Falwell lived in a place whose first syllable is Lynch. All right. Well, in any event,
the world is just a little less whiter today.
That's true. Oh, all right. Well, whatever. Anyway, 503-733-2970. I'm just saying, it seems like if he really did care, he would have snuffed it, or at least been found about 10 or 12 minutes earlier, so I could go upstairs and dig through some of my Jerry Falwell archives, and I didn't have time to put nothing together. All right, well, whatever. It's okay. We're going to make do, because it's the way we roll here at the Rick Emerson Show. 503-733-2970. You can also email, if you like, it is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Doing a little light reading here about Jerry Falwell. Falwell grew up in a strongly segregationist setting and supported racial segregation for many years of his career.
In 1965, Reverend Falwell gave a sermon at the Thomas Road Baptist Church criticizing Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement, which he sometimes referred to as the civil wrongs movement. All right. On his evangelist program, the Old Time Gospel Hour in the mid-60s, he regularly featured segregationist politician George Wallace and Lester Maddox. That's a word I haven't heard for a long time. Oh, all right. It's 503-733-2970. Let's also, as we mourn the loss of Jerry Falwell today, let's also not forget that moment when he called the gay-oriented Metropolitan Community Church a violent satanic system that will one day be utterly annihilated. He said when it was annihilated, there would be a celebration in heaven. All right, there you go. Today we'll have to confine our celebrations to this studio and Portland and most of the free-thinking world. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email us, rick@rickemerson.com. Thank you so much for coming on. What else are we going to get through today? Oh, if I mentioned
that's plenty.
It's a full meal already, isn't it?
There's no room left for dessert.
No. It's sort of an appetizer and an aperitif and a sorbet and a meal all rolled into one. All right. Well, the big story today, and it's just breaking now. If you haven't flipped on the television, I just saw it when I was walking by because we heard that he was slumped over at his desk. But, you know, it's like God has tried to kill him several times before, and he always weasels out of it. God, several times, and I think a guy's had like 15 heart attacks.
Yeah.
Because he was a large man. He was a portly man. He was so full of the Holy Spirit that I don't entirely know that he could find pants that fit him most of the time. But God apparently tried to snuff him a few times in the past, and he would always just, he would kind of snake out of it somehow.
It takes a lot of power to divide your time between him and Fred Phelps. So he finally had to settle on one at a time.
It's true. Yes, God couldn't figure out who was the bigger apostate of the two of them. Fred Phelps, man, I'm just saying, it would be, God, I'm sure, knows what he's doing. And there is a divine plan. All I'm saying is this, and this is all I'm going to say about this. Jerry Falwell has apparently been taken care of. In accordance with providence. What is that word? Providence, is that the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Prophecy, whatever. It's one of those days. All I'm saying is this, is that I am sure that in due time, Fred Phelps will himself fit into God's plan. One would imagine sooner rather than later. That's all I'm saying about that. All right, it's 503-733-2970. The big story today, God tires of Jerry Falwell's shenanigans and decides just to take care of business once and for all. What else do we have here? Paris Hilton. It's a great day. It really is. You know, I wasn't feeling so hot when I came in today. It wasn't even that I was grumpy. It was just sort of feeling, sort of low-key. Feeling mellow. Didn't know that there was going to be much of substance to talk about today. But you know what? Between Jerry Falwell and this, the fact that Paris Hilton might be, what is that jail called in Arizona? It's not Arapaho. That's an Indian tribe. Or maybe it is that. It's that place where the guy runs the tent city and makes the inmates wear pink.
Maricopa.
Is that what it's called?
Yes, that's
with
right.
Sheriff Joe, what's his name? You know, that guy that's always on those
Husser.
That's exactly what he is, too. It's a walking tall prison. Exactly what it is. Jerry Falwell, of course, not walking tall or at all today. I'm going to find a way to turn every joke into a comment on Jerry Falwell, just so you're aware. So if you're tired of that, you might as well tune out now, because that's going to happen for the next 4 hours. Anyway, so Paris Hilton may go to some sort of tent city where she'll be beaten savagely. All of my sentences about Paris Hilton, by the way, are going to include the phrase, and beaten savagely. That's really the only way that this day could get any better. Except that I got this photo of her smoking a big joint. That's what you want to do, right in front of a paparazzi camera, as you're getting ready to go off to, the Who's Cow. Be photographed using a class one drug. That's a great idea. Well done. All right, so we have Paris Hilton. What else? What's the single worst thing you could possibly fall into and nearly drown? We'll answer that magical question later on. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard will join us today. She was going to be talking about something or other. I forget exactly what it was, but I know she's going to be discussing Jerry Falwell as well. Oh, because they got this bid. They blew out this guy
this guy at the Justice Department who was apparently responsible for firing all of those U.S. attorneys, and nobody really cares about it, which is kind of my, which is my point. Is a story that they, I don't even know why they bothered, why this guy bothered to resign, because it's a story that 90% of Americans don't know anything about. So we'll talk to her a little bit about the fact that they're making the whole tempest out of this. I mean, it's not even a teapot. They're really making just a tempest out of just like half a teacup is what it is. But she'll also talk about Jerry Falwell. I'm going to find a way to tie every guest into Jerry Falwell today as well. Jim Roop is going to be joining us from Las Vegas, where inexplicably, I don't know why they're holding the CMAs, the Country Music Awards, in Las Vegas. Seems like a very non... Is it Vegas that doesn't have any country stations? There's a pretty large... No, it's New York, isn't it? Boston. And Boston has no country stations as well?
Because they... L.A.?
L.A. had... No, they had one, but it went out. That's right. It went something else. It went moving. I think it went to the moving format,
that's where
actually.
Rick Hees works now.
Really?
Yeah, he just plays the same bits he played 30 years ago on Kissin' from his house in Knoxville.
I'm Rick Dees. Did you know I invented crystal breath? You know, he invented crystal breath, which seems like a really ill-named product. Now, I think about it. Crystal breath seems like... I don't know if that's a little subliminal advertising that they're doing there, or if that's just somebody didn't think things through in the focus group.
All right.
I always wanted to have a female producer named Elizabeth so I could call her Crystal Beth on the program. I never really was able to do that. Couldn't really ever find anybody.
My middle name's Elizabeth.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Can I start calling you Crystal Beth?
Oh, that's the lamest thing you've ever
seen. Come on, that's hilarious.
Why is that hilarious?
Because it's like Crystal Meth. But it's Beth. Ah! Ah! Okay, maybe it's not so funny. It's funny to me, you bastards. Funny to me and Andrew Vox, and that's all that matters. 503-733-2970. All of that coming up, plus today's top five. Top five rock anthems of all time. And we will try to do this, the next chapter in our search for the second worst story of all time. We will try to do all of that today, plus the AM 970 noon news hour. We'll talk to our good friend Dennis Fitzenbarger. We'll do some other things that are sort of some of the things on the periphery, some things lurking on the fringes today. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely, ever so slightly moody Sarah X. Dillon.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh. All right, whatever you say. How are your nails doing over there?
Oh, they're okay.
Uh-huh. Would you like to share with her? How many of your nails are broken?
One, so okay. Far. But this one looks like it's going to pop off any second.
Now, see, you were lying to the manicurist this morning when you said half of them were gone, as you were trying to weasel your way into an appointment. She didn't have any time for you, and you're like, half my nails are gone. I have to get in today.
Well, she sent me. I went yesterday to get it done. This is so ridiculous.
I do have to say this, if I could just make this observation.
Oh, no.
So as you were on the phone this morning trying to book an appointment with your manicurist, no, I really just have to say, you did sound like... And you know I love you, but you did sound like the bitchiest white woman on earth.
Well, you know what? I would have sat and waited the 20 minutes yesterday had they not told me, call tomorrow and we can do it for you tomorrow. And I have to get these things off. So I left and I didn't wait. And then I called today to make the appointment. She's like, we don't do that on Tuesday.
Hong, you have to get me in today. Hong, hello? Hong? Hong, half my nails are gone. I cannot. And you're
not Hong.
Whatever. What is her name?
I don't know.
Didn't I hear you refer to her as Hong? Huang?
No.
What was her name?
I didn't know her name. It was the lady that answered the phone.
That's not true. You said, well, whatever. Anyway, you were making this. She didn't have time to schedule you in. And so as the phone call went on, when you first called up, you had a broken nail. About a third of the way through the phone call, you had three broken nails. And by the end of the phone call, as you were badgering this poor woman trying to get yourself a manicurist appointment, by the end of the phone call, half your nails were broken. That's how you're describing. Half my nails are gone. You have to let me in today. And then finally, it ends up with this phone call. I'm just going to have to take my business somewhere else then. Phone down.
It's not my fault that I was misled.
That's okay.
Oh, there goes another one.
Yeah, probably karma. That's all I'm saying.
I'm trying. That's the problem, is I'm trying to get them taken off, and nobody will.
So life is hard.
You're being mean today.
Uh-huh. They're all out of khakis at the Gap, too.
There we go. Got my nails.
Are you biting your nails off? No, I don't want your nail. That's weird. Don't throw your fingernail at me. Jesus God. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification.
We can hardly hold back the tears.
Falwell was found by office staff in the mansion at Liberty University, unconscious, and emergency services were immediately called and did administer resuscitation efforts.
Didn't work.
Sometimes God does answer your prayers.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes not.
That's about it, really. There'll be plenty more people talking about this in the next hour.
Okay.
We're downloading these as quickly as possible.
There you go.
Down as quickly as possible, being sort of an admittedly relative term, right here. All right.
Oh, and CBS is getting ready to say goodbye to Bob Arc. Not that he's in ill health, but he's leaving the Price is Right. There's a big special tonight.
You know what they should do with him? They should send him over to the evening news. You'd watch the evening news if Bob Barker hosted it, wouldn't you?
I certainly would. Yes.
You know, hey, here's a little free advice. They ought to just swap him and Katie Couric. This is a great idea.
That is a great idea.
Send Katie Couric over to The Price is Right. Send Bob Barker over to whatever, to the evening news. I would,
you know, he fulfills.
Was it the New York Times that ran that big piece about where they called it the woman problem?
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Sunday's New York Times. Some big piece where they had somebody, and I'm pretty sure it was somebody at CBS. I'm not entirely positive about this, but I'm pretty sure it was somebody at CBS. Who made the observation, which Jim and I had made last week, which is that if you look at the ratings, Americans really don't like to watch the evening news from anybody except a 98-year-old white man. That does sort of seem to be the way that my grandparents, my in-laws, all the people who watch television news, I think they're made decidedly uncomfortable by anybody who doesn't look like Bob Schieffer.
But your jowl's going to be hanging down, your eyeballs popping out of the socket.
Got to have huge, out-of-control eyebrows.
Why don't they just have Andy...
spider veins?
No, this isn't... Okay, now listen, here's another great idea. This is like my follow-up to that Bionic Man thing yesterday.
The, instead of having Katie Couric do The Price is Right and sending Bob Barker to do evening news, why doesn't CBS just skip to the bottom of the page, cut to the chase, and just bow to the inevitable and give Andy Rooney the CBS evening news?
Oh, that'd be good.
I mean, really, if you think about it, Andy Rooney really does, he really does speak right to the heart of the CBS evening news demographic in ways that Katie Couric never could. I think we all know that that's true. Because, I mean, if you think about the people that want to sit down and watch CBS evening news, they're all just old and cranky and embittered about things. You know what I mean? You know, either that or sit down and watch another Matlock marathon or something. You put Andy Rooney in the CBS evening news, I'm telling you right now, that's like a 30 share. He got like a 90 share of the 75 to dead demographic. All right. Anywho. All right, 503-73. Now, people are just sending me the names of manicurists. I'm not going to forward these. You can find your own. And I'm not getting a manicure.
And you're
with
making
you.
Me sound like a terrible person, when in fact I went in to give them my business yesterday. They told me to come in today, and now they're saying that they're closed and they won't be able to do
it. I'm just passing along. I'm just relaying the phone call. As your phone call to your manicurist progressed, I'm just saying, your description of the dire need to get your nails done just got more and more extreme. Really, one would have to believe that you had some sort of weird fingernail leprosy and your fingernails were just falling off during the phone call.
Well, I know you don't know what it's like, but I have, like, acrylic nails and I want to get them taken off. I just want them gone and I can't, like, they're secured really tightly onto my nails and I can't get them off myself, so I need to have somebody, one of them, take them off.
Can't you just get, like, whatever glue remover?
No, they're
whatever.
Totally adhered to my nail.
Yeah, I see. This is like this is sort of like the reverse of the hair club for men, where you got to go in once a month and they because you know the hair club for men, that wig they give you at the hair club for men, you know that's not actually, you know, that's just cost, just a tiny little price, but you got to go in for the glue. That's what it is. It's like $350 a month. You go back in and cement that thing back down on your head. All right, 503-733-2970. What are you squinting at me for? I'm just saying it's true. And then Sarah and I shared our tales of racial guilt about being white people who were going to a business where we were, you know, served by some non-white person, and how we had to
I don't think CBS Radio would have been very impressed with the sentence that came out of your mouth.
What? When?
You asked me about my manicurist, and you said, Sarah, is your manicurist Korean?
I did not say that.
Oh, you asked me.
You said, I did not. You volunteered that information.
You asked me.
That is not true. Is this the same manicurist you had last time?
I've been going to them for a while.
Well,
it's a couple.
No. The reason I asked. Well, this is a whole long conversation. But the reason I asked is if this is the same person you went to last time, because I think the last time you went, you and I had the same conversation about how we were We had all this, this ingrained, because I'm just young enough to be plagued by white liberal guilt about everything I do. And I think you and I had the same conversation last time about you're there, and, you know, you just see some of the white girls sitting in a chair, and you do have that weird sensation of, and this is, and I told you this is exactly like when I went to the airport, I don't know, however many years ago this was. I go to the airport, I'm on my way to a job interview, and I look down and I'm all, you know, I'm all scuffed up and rumpled, and I don't want to look like, you know, I don't want to look like some schlepping homeless guy when I go to the interview. So I go to get my shoes shined, and of course I go to the shoe shine place, and then, you know, and there is the guy who's shining my shoes, this is, you know, this black guy, and so I'm having all of this weird cognitive dissonance in my head, and I'm just sitting there being overwhelmed with guilt for no readily apparent reason. I'm sitting in a chair and paying a guy to do a service, and I'm sitting there just feeling like the white liberal guilt just crushing me down, like I'm Charles Atlas unsuccessfully lifting the globe.
And I have that same guilt too. But
so that's why I was asking if it was the same manicurist.
Yeah.
I think you and I had this conversation last time.
Totally. And you know, at first I felt bad. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. But then at the same time, I see, and it's like their family that runs the business. That's their own place. They all
right.
run it. They, you know, they live on, you know, the business that they get and their tips and stuff. So I was tipped really well. Well, and they're very nice people.
That is the weird, but that's the weird thing about it.
It is. It does make you feel kind of weird. Like, am I doing something wrong here?
That's what I'm saying. That's the weird. It's like you, like the, and we're getting off the Jerry Falwell subject, where really is the only story we ought to be talking about today. And we got a break here in a second. We're going to Lisa Goddard. But we were talking about that CBS tolerance and diversity test, and that really is the thing where it's like you try so hard to be tolerant and diverse that you then feel guilty having anybody who's not white do anything for you.
Scotty just passed it.
He just now passed it?
Well, remember when he came in, he was probably showing off his certificate of completion when you told him to come back later.
I thought he passed it last week. Does that mean he failed it before?
I thought we all required to.
He was supposed to have passed it by Monday. Does that mean he failed it before?
I don't know. I don't think it allows you to fail.
They keep you there and beat you until you become tolerant.
They've already redone Jerry Falwell's obituary, removing the line that he was also the cousin of rock and roll piano legend Jerry Lee Lewis.
Because that's wrong. That's Jimmy Swaggart.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Jimmy Swaggart, Mickey Gilley, and Jerry Lee Lewis are all cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jerry Falwell is a... Who would possibly admit to being related to Jerry Falwell anyway? I mean, it's just his mother, and we know all about their relationship, don't we?
So they think he died of cardiac arrhythmia.
Yeah.
He was found unconscious in his office, without a pulse.
Died of an excess of ignorant, stupid hate inside of him.
That's did have a good that'll breakfast, though.
That'll kill you, really? That's fantastic. Great. All right. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. All right. Scotty is clarifying. He already passed the diversity and tolerance test. Today he took and passed the indecency test. Have you guys passed that? The indecency test?
Yeah, I'm all done with all that stuff.
Sarah?
I don't know.
You got to take the indecency test. You're the person with the finger on the button over there. You got to take that.
Okay.
All right. Well, we should break. So we got Lisa Goddard coming up at the bottom of the hour. Let's see. We got phone calls coming in. We got the top five coming up later on. We got Dennis Pitsenbarger coming up. Jim Roop. It's all very exciting. Plus, Jerry Falwell's dead. So we got that going for us. 503-733-2970. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. And welcome to our program, the repository of all white liberal guilt in the Pacific Northwest. You can also email if you like it. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. We got the phone calls coming up. Tim Riley in the noon news hour. We got the top five, Scotty J, Dennis Spitzenbarger. But first, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From the hill, CNN radio correspondent to the stars, the one, the only, the soon-to-be betrothed Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there. How are you?
Well, hello to you.
Hey, you sound better today.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yesterday you sounded a little gravelly. Today you merely sound smoky.
I like that. I like that smoky flavor.
All right, so let's talk about... That's just a weird phrase to come out of your mouth. All right, well, let's talk about Jerry Falwell, man of God, who is no longer with us. So what does it do? Do we know, apart from being filled with a blackened, viscous hate, do we know exactly what it is that he died from? I heard it was cardiac arrhythmia, something like that?
CNN hasn't confirmed that. I'm looking through our latest Wire story. We know he had a history of heart trouble. We understand that he was found unconscious in his office today, and quickly that there was a heartbeat problem there, that he had CPR later, but we don't know what the final diagnosis was of cause of death.
By the way, I'd like to point out that somebody just sent me a picture of this, that Jerry Falwell in his office had, in fact, and this is not a joke, had a huge picture of his own face behind him when he sat there at the desk. Now, I had one of those. It's no longer up. I had one of those in jest in my office upstairs here at CBS Radio Portland. But he, in fact, sat in front of a giant oil painting of his own face, which is fantastic. It really does tell you everything you need to know about Jerry Falwell. So, all right. So there's really not much to report about him at this point. I mean, this really is still breaking news right now, correct?
It is pretty much still breaking news, though we are getting pretty fast reaction in the White House. Tony Snow sent his prayers and condolences, same with Republicans and Democrats on the Hill. I think what's really interesting here, Rick, is that you're seeing, even in this man's death, what he achieved politically, that no one is going to say anything remotely unkind. Not that you would do that when someone dies, but no one is going to even point out their political differences with Jerry Falwell today. He really is seen as such an important political figure among conservative Americans and religious Americans that he really made his own place, I think, in politics that no one is touching today.
Well, that is true. You know, I guess I'll have to make those comments for everybody then. I will have to carry...
I knew that you would find the room for that.
I will have to carry the weight. I will have to carry that yoke like a particularly strong breed of oxen.
You'll be the only one, but here in the Capitol... People are nothing but kindness and sadness.
Now that's not from your vantage point as a political observer. That deference that they're showing him isn't really because of him or his beliefs as such, probably, but rather because they know that on that side of the aisle, he had a lot of people. I don't mean to sound crude. A lot of people still alive that they can't afford to alienate.
Oh, that's right. You know, and I think it's not just his direct political connections, which are very important. And you saw even John McCain trying to get in some photo ops with him so that he could try and get the nomination right now. But I think it's also what he stands for and this idea that many Christian conservatives see him as a leader who gave them a political voice before they had one. You know, Ralph Reed is credited with bringing the South and conservatives into Republican politics, but when you look at the religious aspect, it was really Jerry Falwell that kind of thrust that into the Republican Party. And it came at a time, it wasn't just your Baptists, but it was also conservative Catholics, a lot of folks in the 70s reacting to Vietnam and thinking that the United States had lost all sense of morality. Jerry Falwell really galvanized that, especially around abortion. And then in 1980, his movement coincided with Ronald Reagan's rise to power, and that is really what thrust this idea of religious conservatism right smack into American politics, where it still is today. This next presidency is going to be a real test of that, to see, especially the Bush White House, which represents that to some degree, being so unpopular, how much strength does this kind of movement still have? It's not clear.
I do remember. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the rise of the moral majority,
right?
Which was, I don't know, it would have been what, 82, 83, something like that.
79, it was founded.
79, really?
In the 80s.
Okay,
right.
And you know, the problem with them, I have to phrase this carefully. The problem with the moral majority as a political organization, anyway, is that The moral majority, I suppose, seemed like an interesting or politically expedient idea at the time, but it sort of became this weird Frankenstein's monster where, rather than remaining even remotely centrist, it just seemed to list like 40 degrees to starboard and just became the repository of all kinds of extremists,
Larry
you know.
Flint, anyone who's seen People versus Larry Flint knows Jerry Falwell well from that. He covered a wide range of issues, and then you know, and it just goes back and forth all the way up to September 11th and his remark after September 11th saying that it was essentially God's way of punishing people. He apologized for that very soon after, but you know, he really took that kind of Christian righteousness or morality, whichever way you want to see it, and used that as his main political weapon on a wide variety of fronts. And a lot of Christians say they're thankful to him for that because they feel like America was sliding down this dangerous morality slope. Others say he went way too far, like you, that he really was going after just everyone and everything and was filled with hate of others.
Yeah, well, I suppose in lieu of flowers, I'll try to find an address that people can send Teletubbies dolls to.
Okay.
You know, we mourn the death of Jerry Falwell. All right.
No, Falwell fact, apparently he was scouted by the St. Louis Cardinals back in the day.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Do you have some sort of prep service where someone like this passes away or is in the news that they immediately start sending you factoids?
No. I wish that we did. No, I just was looking all around the net and all around different stories that are out there, checking out. You know, I did meet him when I was a small child.
Really?
He was a tall man. All I remember. He was a very large man.
Do you remember if he had some sort of an unnerving sort of creepy vibe to him at all?
I do remember trying to talk to him and trying to be kind of friendly, and he must have, something else was going on. I don't think it's a fair judgment of who he was or wasn't from that interaction, but he wasn't really interested in talking to me. He had a lot of other stuff going on.
By the way, in case you're looking for fun facts, you can also note that the guy who ghost wrote most of Jerry Falwell's books, including the guy who was the ghostwriter of Jerry Falwell's autobiography, is himself a gay man. So Jerry,
oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
so
know.
a guy named Mel White. So you
wow,
can you can look that up. See, and then you can have that free of charge. It is a Rick Emerson's gift to you today.
Wow.
Real quickly before we go, just on a tiny side note.
Right.
Paul McNulty was the Deputy Attorney General.
So there's so much going on today. Yeah.
So he has resigned because of this business of the firing of these U.S. attorneys everywhere.
Not exactly, but yeah, he has resigned.
Is that not why? Is it not related to that?
He listed in his resignation letter, he cited personal reasons, saying that he's been in government 20 years, he's got four kids, a few of whom are on their way to college. Basically, he said, I need more money. Now, most people on the Hill questioned that, including Arlen Specter, who just straight out in committee said, and this was it was an amazing day, this one committee hearing we had today on this issue. Arlen Specter said, I think he left because it's embarrassing for a professional to work in this Justice Department. That's a Republican saying that. It was astounding.
That's an amazing quote.
Yeah.
So we got that guy resigning. Jerry Falwell has died, and Paris Hilton might be beaten savagely in a prison tent somewhere in Arizona. It really is an amazing week.
And it's only Tuesday.
I know. It's not even noon our time. All right. It's going to be a busy day, clearly, for you, so I will let you get back to your job. Thank you for tolerating my juvenile foolishness, as always.
Anytime.
And we will talk to you soon. Ladies and gentlemen, Lisa Goddard on the Hill. Fantastic. All right, there you go, Lisa Goddard. All right, 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. Let's see here. Rick, about Sarah's nails. I am certain if Sarah were to ask, she could find dozens, perhaps even hundreds of loyal listeners who would love nothing more than to gently caress her soft and supple hands. And then make tea out of her fingernail clippings. Tea. All right, thank you, sir. Let's see.
Did you find my nail I threw at you?
No, you threw your fingernail. I don't know where it landed. Oh, here it is. I'm going to sell this on eBay. And I'll put this
You're
over
weird.
Here.
You're
weird. Yeah, I'm weird. All right. Let's see. I'm getting a bunch of great emails about them. The great thing about this show is how people have no problem just revealing like their innermost flaws and neuroses, like the fact that Sarah and I are apparently not alone in our liberal guilt. We've got this. This is from Todd. Todd says, "Hey Rick, here's a fantastic story about white liberal guilt. On Thanksgiving, I know the guy who wrote this, that he really is the whitest of men. He's, he, I mean, he's, He really is. He's translucent. He's so white. On Thanksgiving, I was he's ivory. On Thanksgiving, I was dispatched to the grocery store to get yams for dinner. I got to the store and they only had sweet potatoes. Not thinking, I turned to the shopper next to me and I said, "Hey, do you know anything about sweet potatoes?" To my horror, time slowed down and I realized that the shopper I was asking was a kindly old black woman. I wanted to grab the words from the air and shove them back into my throat so the nice lady would somehow unhear them. Thankfully, the woman didn't think anything of it. And then he says, and this is a real salient point here, he says, "Maybe I'm the only one, but when I'm around someone of a different race, religion, or whatever, I feel myself going so completely out of my way to prove I'm not a bigot that I wonder if I'm somehow slingshotting around the sun and becoming a reverse racist because I'm still acting differently, even though I'm acting differently to prove that I'm not acting any differently. I hate myself," he says. Fantastic. Thank you, sir. This is a place where you can share all of those thoughts.
It totally is, because when I go through my mind, I'm like, should I go to the Korean family and get them done, or should I go try and find white people? Why would I try and find white people?
I can't make a white person wait on me.
They're charging the same amount as the Korean people. I mean, why do I feel guilty about doing that?
Because you totally...
Because I feel like I shouldn't... Yeah, I have...
The same reason I felt about when I was at the airport. And again, I did whatever. I mean, here's the thing, and I know... we talk about this. I know that we are speaking for all kinds of people of whatever walk of life who've had these thoughts go through their head. The same reason why when I'm at some airport in Wisconsin, the same reason I'm sitting there feeling all weird because I'm sitting there and a black man is polishing my shoes. You know, there's nothing wrong. And if you think about it, look at it objectively, totally nothing wrong or weird or strange about it. Except that because I'm a white person in America, I've just got this whole weird, like, bizarre white legacy that I carry around in my head. And so I just feel profoundly uncomfortable having certain jobs done by somebody who's non-white. You just feel all because you feel like a terrible person. You feel like you are living into some... you feel like as though you are living into some terrible negative white stereotype. And I think because you and I, and we've talked about this a lot, how I think, I mean, I can't speak for all of us, but I think a lot of us who are in the same general age, you know, Tim and I certainly thought about this, about how we have maybe older relatives or we come from families. I mean, and I'll just speak for myself here, that I am sort of... I mean, I'm obviously left of center compared to a lot of people, period. But especially compared to some people in my family, where I grew up with so many terrible examples of how to behave. I mean, I just come from a long line of people in my family who are just really, really unenlightened and embarrassing in terms of the race relations or the way they deal with people who don't look like them. And it's like I firmly resolved that about the time that I was 14, 15, 16, I want to call it an enlightenment, but I went through, you know, because when you're growing up, you just think exactly the way your parents think. I mean, when you're 7 or 8 or 9, you just recite all the crap that your parents say without even really thinking about it. Like, you don't process it. You don't work through it in your head. Your parents say that somebody is different or strange or weird. You do when you're 5, you just kind of go, oh, okay. You know, but then around the time I was, 13 or 14, and I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it is probably very telling that this happened at around the same time that I started to listen to both rock and hip-hop all at once, which really does music, really broadens your horizons about these things. And I mean, I think, you know, you start to expose yourself to any form of the arts, and I think you really, you know, your eyes are open to a lot of things in regards to different cultures. So around the time I was 13 or 14, 15, I really began this conscious effort to no longer be like my parents that way, to distance myself from my family members and just the horrible things they would say, just horrible bigoted prejudice things that would come out of my grandparents' mouth. Like, I'm talking about my grandfather, just all of the things that he clearly believed. I mean, just these really awful, indefensible, I mean, almost darkly humorous things he would say because they're just so unbelievably bigoted. I mean, it really was like living with a less funny version of Archie Bunker. So I had this whole vow that I was not going to be that way, but just like Todd said, so now the result is that I feel guilty about almost anything. Almost anything. All right. Rick, the smiting of Jerry Falwell says, "Eric, he is God's way of putting Tammy Faye and the rest of TBN on notice. I am glad God has finally gotten his priorities straight."
Oh, Tammy Faye's going any day now.
Well, Tammy Faye, man, she's down to weigh in like...
She's like 60 pounds.
That's no good.
She's not doing good.
That's no good. What is it, the cancer?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I wasn't prepared.
No.
Cancer?
I barely knew her.
That was just inappropriate.
It's part of my patented gallows humor, Sarah. It's part of the black wit for which people tune in. No, Tammy Faye's great. I don't have any problem with Tammy Faye Baker. And I think a lot of that... Well, first of all, have we all seen The Eyes of Tammy Faye? It's a great documentary. If you haven't seen The Eyes of Tammy Faye, it's great. It really is pretty wonderful. It's narrated by RuPaul, of all people. The Eyes of Tammy Faye just kind of gives a general overview of her life with Jim Baker and the rise and fall of PTL. And then it talks about her life after Jim Baker. Is he still in prison? No, he's out, right? Jim Baker? Yeah, he's out of prison. So, you know, talks about her life before, with, and then after Jim Baker and the Heritage Club. And then I think I'm sort of biased about Tammy Faker Tammy Faye Baker. Years ago, I don't know, 96, probably a decade now, she had that book she put out. And I interviewed her for, I don't know, probably 40 minutes. And she was hilarious. She was really, really great. There was just something... And she was just nutty. I mean, and I don't mean nutty like she was wacky. I mean, really, there was just something kind of cracked about her. She just seemed not altogether tethered to reality, but in a way that was simultaneously sort of baffling and charming. So anyway, so I got no problem with Tammy Baker. Hey, what about Oral Roberts? Is Oral Roberts dead or alive? I know we do this a lot. Did God take him home?
I think he's been gone for a while.
Really? Because, you know, remember, Oral Roberts, this is a thing that I think you have to be 30 years or older to remember. Oral Roberts was the guy who shook down his followers for about $40 million back in about 1983 because he claimed that God told him in a vision, and I forget the actual dollar amount. Oral Roberts was most famous. Well, he was famous for two things. Oral Roberts was famous for two things. One, for claiming that he saw a 900-foot Jesus in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And B, for claiming that God appeared to him in a vision and told him that unless he was able to raise like $30 million from his flock, that God was going to kill him. It should be noted, by the way, that the deadline for raising the $30 million came and went, and it had not been raised. And I swear to Christ, he got on television and said that God had granted him an extension. So there really just is no sense of shame in some of those guys.
He's still around.
Oral Roberts, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, his time is coming. All right. Let's see. Let's get a couple of these calls, which may be about nothing in particular. Why? Hello there.
Hey, Rick, what's happening?
How can I help you, sir?
I got two things. One is a brilliant idea that I was wondering if you knew whether it had been done or not about the Blues Brothers. And the other one is a terrible idea for a terrible game show.
All right. Well, give us in whatever order you like, sir.
All right. Well, we'll do the terrible one first. That way we finish good. The terrible one. Okay, you remember that, the Sarah May rumor, that's more than you would. The game kids would play, like in junior high, MASH?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So it would be a game show like that where you could actually win a mansion, an apartment, a house, or shack.
That's a great idea.
You'd pick four guys and then four cars, right. One good, the rest crappy or whatever.
That's a really great idea.
And then if you win, you have to marry that person, drive that car, and have that many kids.
I'm with you. No, I'm for that. I'd watch that.
And make millions, me and you.
All right.
And the other one is like a Blues Brothers tribute, but you would play a concert or whatever, and you would go through all the different, like the diner scene with Aretha Franklin, and you'd have guest performances. You would go through the whole thing, almost like a musical, but it would just be the musical performances and like small set changes, and in the end you'd have the guy that was out on stage that introduces the Blues Brothers, and in the crowd you'd have like cops with fake guns standing around.
And so this would be like a traveling music review, like Footloose.
Yes.
That's a fantastic idea. I would pay money to see that. I'd pay $15 to see that.
Has that not been done, and if not, why?
I don't know. In fact, I don't. That seems really obvious now that I think about it, because the Blues Brothers really are, that is an enduring franchise, and they are a strong part of the pop iconography. I don't know why that hasn't been done.
You two guys dress up like Jake and Elwood?
You know what? Hell, we could do that now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even think you'd need any... I'm not even sure. Well, if you're doing the likeness, you'd probably need likeness rights or something, but I'm pretty sure you could do that now. You ought to get on that.
Most of the songs they performed were cover songs anyway.
Yeah. No, it's true. You ought to take care of that.
All right, I'm on it.
All right, thank you. This email says, Rick, as a friend of mine said about the Reverend Falwell,
Oh, because apparently they tried CPR on him. Oh, how fantastic. His last moments on Earth may have been with another man's lips touching his own.
How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, eat that, pal. Suck on that. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. What's up? Show on Earth.
Thank you.
I was just talking about the whole racist dope thing. Okay, so, you know, do you guys have a Safeway club card? And you go to Safeway and you use it, and then it comes up on the receipt, shows your full name.
Yes.
Well, the workers are supposed to say, thank you, Mr., and the following.
Right.
Well, at the Safeway that I go to,
now,
sometimes...
Do you wish to ponder what you're about to say before you say it?
Yeah, sure, what the heck.
All right, hold on a second. Think about whether you really want to make this observation. Just let you sit on that for just a moment. I always give a fake name there anyway. All right, Justin. All right. Do you really want to go forward with this garment?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Well, so I was going through the check stand one day, and this always seems to happen to me where the shortest check stand usually has, well, an African-American worker there.
Yes.
And my last name happens to be White Man. And so they have to say, thank you, Mr. White Man.
Oh, okay. All right.
And that's just uncomfortable.
No, that is uncomfortable. And you know what? That was worth the wait. You chose correctly. Good call, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Well done. Thank you, White Man. Thank you. I'm going to thank that guy for everything today. I have nowhere else to go. We'll break here. We'll come back. Tim Riley around the corner with the AM 970 Jerry Falwell is Dead Hour.
You stay there. We continue next. Don't go anywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's your snuff watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
John McCain says Reverend Falwell is a man of distinguished accomplishments.
Well, that's certainly true.
Mitt Romney says he will be forever remembered. Yes, indeed. Jerry Falwell is dead.
The best part about those comments, I don't mean to step on you right away, but the best part about those two comments is that neither of them is actually a compliment.
No.
You can tell that somebody is being very careful not to actually praise Jerry Falwell.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got we've got many, many observations we'll be making about him throughout the day. That's so great that the McCain and Romney both back to back. What do they say? He'll be remembered.
He will be forever remembered, said Romney. And McCain says, a man of distinguished accomplishments. That can be said about the dry cleaner on the corner from
Eric Rudolph.
So, where do we begin? Jerry Falwell is dead. Did you know he was a twin? Born on August 11th, 1933, in Lynchburg, Virginia, where he died.
Just mean there's another one out there somewhere.
Yes, dude. He might not be alive. He attended Bible College in Springfield, Missouri, where he prepared for the ministry and later returned to his hometown and founded the Thomas Road Baptist Church in 1956. He was only 22. The church currently has 24,000 members. In the mid-50s, he founded the Old Time Gospel Radio Hour, which is now aired on every continent except Antarctica. In 1967, he created the Lynchburg Christian Academy, a Christian-based school providing kindergarten, elementary, and high school. Then he founded Liberty University, a liberal arts...
Really?
Really. That's a liberal arts Christian university in 1971.
Who goes to study liberal arts under Jerry Falwell's aegis?
Mm-hmm. Jesus. This is where 21,500 students now attend. He was also the publisher of National Liberty Journal, a monthly newspaper read by over 200,000. In 1979, best known for organizing the Moral Majority, a conservative political lobbying movement, put Reagan into office. And during that decade, he was involved in a highly publicized First Amendment Supreme Court case with Hustler magazine founder Larry Flint. The Supreme Court ruled that Falwell could not collect damages from Flint when he printed an advertisement parody alleging that Falwell lost his virginity with his mother while drinking liquor in the outhouse. The case regained popularity in the 1996 movie, The People vs. Larry Flint.
So, where can I get a Campari? You know, we really ought to. I don't typically drink, but really we ought to all raise a Campari today to the
pastor. If only we had a listener party today. Well, of course, best known for his anti-homosexual stance. Also alleged that a children's Teletubby character was gay because his antenna was shaped like a triangle, a symbol of gay pride. Yes, he has survivors. A wife of 49 years named Marcel, 3 grown children and 8 grandchildren. So, we have a lot of stuff here about Jerry Falwell because, well, he can only die once. Officials confirmed that he passed away at 12:40 Eastern Time. Falwell's personal physician and cardiovascular specialist at Lynchburg General Hospital is Dr. Carl Moore, and he believes Falwell died of cardiac arrhythmia. However, a specific cause of death isn't known at this time.
Falwell was found unconscious without a heartbeat in his office today at Liberty University around 11:30 in the morning. He was found by his associates. Efforts to resuscitate Dr. Falwell at Liberty University were unsuccessful.
The supple lips of a white man touched the Reverend Falwell, trying to bring him back to this earth. It was unsuccessful.
Further efforts to resuscitate him by the emergency medical services en route to the hospital were also unsuccessful. Further efforts at Lynchburg General Hospital were also unsuccessful, and he was pronounced dead at 12:40 p.m.
All right, that's what I want for my new screensaver. Just a picture of another man with his mouth pressed against Jerry Falwell.
It's going to be up there somewhere.
Him flat on his...
offering money for that right now.
Flat on his back. Flat on his back with a paramedic just putting his tongue right in Jerry Falwell, right near Jerry Falwell's mouth anyway. That's great. All right, this email says, Rick, this is a fascinating topic. It really is. I wish I had Lisa Goddard back on the phone, although we are going to be able to talk about this for days to come.
Well, we still have Fred Phelps alive. So that's for another day.
Yeah, day's not over.
There's only so much room down below there.
Here's why I wanted Lisa Goddard back on the phone, although we will be able to talk about this as they get ready to do whatever it is they're going to do with Jerry Falwell's body.
Well, his fingers are about to be slammed in the pearly gates.
No, but hello? Come on!
You took the wrong bus.
This email says, this is a really interesting question. This is from, I won't say who it's from, for reasons that will become clear.
Is it his wife?
I am just... Well, I doubt that. I'm just going to read this email. That's all I'm going to do. Just going to read this email. And, of course, reading this email, I have no way whether the information contained in this email is accurate or not. The first part of this email is commentary. The latter part is a story, which may or may not have any basis in reality. Subject line, Falwell. This is the interesting part of this, actually. It says, will George Bush attend his funeral? That's a really interesting question.
Oh, that is.
Will Dick Cheney? Will Karl Rove? These are the questions I have. That's a fascinating question. Will George Bush go to the funeral of a guy who said that 9/11 was caused by feminists and gays? Will George Bush go to the funeral of a man who was a segregationist? Will George Bush go to the funeral of a man who did say, and this is, I forget, what is the name of the book? Somebody sent me a link to the actor because I was... Somebody had emailed me about this earlier. This book, it's by Jonathan Kirsch, I think it is. It's called, it's a book about Revelation. And Jerry Falwell made this infamous statement a few years back where he said, and this is Jerry Falwell saying this, by the way. Jerry Falwell made an observation a couple years ago where he stated that the Antichrist would, and this is, again, Jerry Falwell, he noted that, of course, the Antichrist
would have to be Jewish. Because he is a man of God, Jerry Falwell. So the question is, will George Bush attend his funeral? Boy, that really is... I want them to hurry up and bury him today so I can find out the answer to that. And then he says, then the email continues, anyway, F him. He hit on a buddy of mine's girlfriend when she graduated from Liberty. He's a hypocrite, but you already knew that. Yes, I did, sir. But thank you anyway. Never hurts to have reinforcement. Here's Tim Riley.
So let's get back to some of these wonderful things here. Apparently, Falwell was a good friend of this doctor who tried to save him but was unsuccessful.
It's devastating to me personally because even though we had a physician-patient relationship, he was a friend of mine as well.
And then we have Liberty University Executive Vice President Ronald Godwin, who said he was the last person to see Falwell alive this morning.
I had breakfast with Dr. Falwell this morning, and he seemed to be in good spirits, and he went to his office, I went to mine, and he was found later unconscious.
Do you hear like an electronic whirring happening in the background there?
Yes.
This was sort of like he's got a third, like an octo arm or something sort of moving around as he speaks.
All right. And, Goodwin says activities at Liberty University will go on as scheduled.
We will do just fine this weekend. It'll be something like Virginia Tech, I suppose, and that'll be a bittersweet occasion, but we will have a baccalaureate service on Friday night, and we will have commencement on Saturday as scheduled.
Well, he sounds like a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's exactly like Virginia
Tech.
We're
going to have barbecue.
Let's flapjacks. That's how Jerry would have wanted it. We're going to bid him farewell with a shoe fly pie.
Excellent.
Here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
Meanwhile, Tony Snow has a little bit of comment during his daily briefing.
The first thing you do is you pray for him and you pray for his family.
Don't pray for him.
This is the kind of thing that is going to be a shock to those who love him and were around him. And I think the proper attitude at this juncture is to pass on our condolences and prayers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like a carefully worded statement. I would if you think about it, I mean, look, one either believes that prayer works or it doesn't. If prayer doesn't work, then it's, you know, there's no point. If prayer does work, you know, I guess what's one more on the pile, because he did manage to delude millions of people into following him, who are no doubt praying for his salvation right now. Let's see. Oh, but we have an answer on this. Not only is Jim Baker out of jail, we were talking about Jim Baker. Boy, you know, I miss the 80s. Yeah, I never thought I would say that, because the 80s were by and large terrible.
They're better than the 70s.
Well, see, if I was doing this show 5 years ago, I could make a
The 80s were a little bit more well-groomed than the 70s.
I suppose. I mean, well, let me make a note. Let me make a note to myself. Someday when there's nothing going on. Someday when no one's dying.
I mean, aside from Ron Burgundy,
80s versus 70s. I have some thoughts about that, but we'll do those another day. Another day when there isn't so much in the news. What was I talking about? Blah, 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 blah. The thing about the 80s is the 80s was really a golden age for disgraced preachers. It really was, because you had Jimmy Swaggart. You had Jim Baker. You had Oral Roberts. You had, that's when, you know, Jerry Falwell started to make all of his idiot nutcase statements, really. I mean, it was just, the 80s, it was just a golden time for as Sam Kinison called it, the God's special education team here on Earth. Rick, not only is Jim Baker out of prison, but they actually gave him another effing show. It's way down the chain of channels, but I couldn't believe what I was seeing. How does something like this happen? Another killer show, Dave. It's the will of God, sir. Well, apparently, you know, that's a reality show that I would watch. A reality show I would watch is one of those, is like a Jim Baker. I'm surprised Tammy Baker never got a reality. Well, I guess she's all with the dying now. I guess she can't do much. But it's sort of back in the day, she does seem like the kind that should have been given another TV show. Here's Tim Riley.
So, presidential historian Douglas Brinkley said Falwell provided a voice for those who couldn't be heard because they had no teeth.
Falwell filled a void of talking about what he called a moral majority. He was building on Richard Nixon's silent majority, meaning a lot of Americans have certain values that aren't being talked about due to the counterculture nature of the 1960s and early 70s.
Jesus. Wait, really?
The Flower Children and the Summer of Love.
Hello. 40 years ago. By the way, anytime somebody starts memorializing you and they start off by saying, he really did pick up where Richard Nixon left off, you know that you were really a good person and only the most relative, the most subjective of senses. Tim Riley continues now.
Farmer Christian Coalition Director Ralph Reed can't believe Falwell is dead.
Obviously, we all know that eventually, you know, we're all going to go home. But for somebody like Dr. Falwell, who, though in his 70s, was as energetic as anybody in their 30s or 40s you'd ever met, it's still a shock.
Say goodnight, funny man. He never slowed down.
Dr. Falwell was somebody who was always on the move and really kept going all the way to the very end.
Yes, 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 he did. Let me just say this now so I can get it out of the way. Falwell that ends well. I had to do it now, because otherwise it was just going to sit there. It was going to sit there like in the, it's like when you have email in the outgoing folder. It's not quite sending. It's just sort of sitting there and just cycling over and over again. That's really what that was. Let's see. What else do we have? Oh, Rick. This email says, Rick, don't forget to add Peter Popoff to that list of disgraced televangelists. Do you know Peter Popoff?
No, I don't remember him.
Peter Popoff, he was fantastic. He was, if you've seen Leap of Faith with Steve Martin, which is a flawed but brilliant movie. Really a good, it's Steve Martin, Deborah Winger, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Meatloaf is in it, Liam Neeson. It's one of my favorite movies. Not a perfect movie. It's got flaws. But it really is a great, great film. It's an overlooked little gem, in my opinion. The character of Jonas Nightingale, played by Steve Martin in Leap of Faith, is based on Peter Popoff. He's the guy who did faith healing. He would do his big shtick, Peter Popoff's big shtick. He would do these big tent revivals all through the Mideast. So they'd stop in, like, Rust Bucket, Kansas. And he'd roll in, and they'd set up a huge tent, and they'd have 2,000 people show up. And he would have his assistant go out in the audience and get some hick to stand up, some yokel. And Peter Popoff would say, all right, I'm... And he would do like, who's that guy, the biggest douche in the universe, John Edward?
Yeah, he's one of them.
Are you talking about the psychic, too?
The psychic.
Yeah, John Edward.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the John Edwards is running for president.
No. No, he doesn't appear to be a douche in any real way.
Yeah.
But Peter Popoff's saying, like John Edward, somebody would stand up in the crowd, and they would have a problem, but they wouldn't tell him what it was. And then he would magically divine it. He would say, all right, you've just lost your job. And your daughter is pregnant by the mechanic down the street. And you wonder how God is going to take care of you. And they would say, that's it, Reverend. God bless you. You're amazing. And it was really amazing until James Randi, also known as the Amazing Randi, debunked him live on The Tonight Show by revealing that he just had like one of those things jammed into his ears. He had like a little tiny radio transmitter in his ear. And his assistant was just going out and pre-interviewing these people beforehand and just relaying the information to him over a hidden microphone. And that's what that was all about. He said, I went to school with his kids. Then one day, they were no longer there.
Yes.
Lord does work a mysterious way. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Tammy Faye was on a reality show. She was on The Surreal Life.
That's right. I forgot about that. That was the same season that had, what's his name?
Ron Jeremy and Vanilla Ice. And
I didn't watch it. Was she good?
Actually, it was interesting. Yeah, she was all right. And the interesting thing was that I always thought was that her and Ron Jeremy got along quite well together.
She really was great. I mean, just a little bit that I got from interviewing her and then seeing that movie, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, and just the other interviews I saw, she really, I mean, how do I put this? She didn't seem like a very bright woman. But she did, I sort of, my view on Tammy Faye, I'm talking about like she's already dead, my view on Tammy Faye, though, is that she was not a very smart woman. She liked having a lot of expensive, shiny things around, and whatever story Jim Baker made up to explain it all, she just sort of bought, and she just kind of went along with it, unthinkingly, like a lot of wives do with husbands who were involved in scurrilous activities, but she didn't seem to have a mean bone in her body, you know, she really didn't, so, I mean, I think it's great that she got along well with Ron Jeremy. She's great. So, cool. Thank you, sir.
Yep, bye.
There you go. All right, Tim Riley.
The Reverend Al Sharpton has released a written statement on the death of Falwell. It reads, I am deeply saddened by the passing of the Reverend Jerry Falwell. Though he and I debated much and disagreed often, we shared a very cordial and warm relationship. I visited him in Lynchburg, dined with him, and even talked with him during personal crises. Though we are at the political opposite end of the spectrum, as two people could be, I truly respected his commitment to his beliefs and our mutual belief in our Lord, Jesus Christ. I also stated on my National Syndicator radio show, that's not on anywhere,
plug,
that I will pray for the Reverend Falwell.
You do that.
And, it might not do any good at this point.
Yeah.
That ship has, that time has passed. All right, so there you go. I had some observation to make about Al Sharpton and Jerry Falwell. Wait. Oh, here it is. Paige and Christopher Hitchens. You want to talk about a good time to be that guy. Christopher Hitchens, who was on Dennis Miller last week and who is one of the smartest guys I have ever heard in my life. I mean, Christopher Hitchens, he's written this new book. His new book came out last week. It is called God Is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything.
Oh, yeah.
And he's sort of a professional contrarian. I mean, Christopher Hitchens is a guy, he rouses the rabble. He's like a really, really libertarian, really smart, not crazy Ann Coulter. I mean, Ann Coulter is just a shrew and a harpy and is frequently incorrect about all the things. I mean, the stuff in her book largely appears to be just made-up crap that she's just pulled out of her ass. Christopher Hitchens is the furthest thing from that. That guy has got a brain like a big box full of Ginsu knives. You don't want to cross him. You cross him, Christopher Hitchens is so smart that were I given the chance to interview him, I don't even know that I would. Even though I agree with him on most things, just because he is phenomenally intelligent and terrifyingly very verbal, very loquacious. But he's written this book called How Religion Poisons Everything, blah, 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 blah. And he was on, he talked about the Sean Hannity. He was on the Sean Hannity. He was on Hannity and Combs a couple of days ago, last night, something like that. There's a video going around YouTube where, man, he just owns Hannity. Hannity just gets spanked, just gets schooled. So this is a good time to be Candy him. He can start booking himself. He's the same one Christopher Hitchens wrote. He's the same one that wrote this book. Like a month after Mother Teresa died, he wrote this book called Sacred Cow, which is about how Mother Teresa was a terrible person. Who writes a book about how Mother Teresa is an awful person? That would be Christopher Hitchens, by the way. Rick, Jim Baker has a program in... Where would you suppose Jim Baker has a program based out of, Tim? This is really obvious. Where do all those people go?
Mississippi.
Branson, Missouri.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It's broadcast all over the world. By the way, there's a reality show on the Sundance Channel which follows Jim Baker's son, Jamie, and Jamie's wife. Jamie Baker, Jim Baker's son, has a reality program in which he tries to bring God to the younger folk. The program is called Cringe in 3, 2, 1. One Punk Under God.
Oh, I bet
what?
I bet he has tattoos.
He does. Jesus. And long hair.
Oh, no.
Tattoos and long hair. One Punk Under God. Gold. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, former Liberty University Vice President Ed Dobson says he saw both sides of Jerry Falwell.
Really?
There was the Jerry Falwell you saw on television, where he was debating and arguing over moral issues. And then there was the Jerry Falwell that I knew. He was a man of deep compassion, of prayer, of vision.
I wonder if he knew Jerry Falwell in a biblical sense.
Well, he says he has a very special place in his heart for Jerry.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Let's see here if I can get back to here we go.
I went shopping for a lot of wine.
I had the assumption that he would live forever, even though I know that's not true. He just, to me, seemed to be bigger than life, and he will be greatly missed.
He was bigger than life. He was larger than life. Let's see here. Rick, Jerry Falwell is the gift that keeps on giving as he just created the rest of the week's shows. To paraphrase the clip you just played, Dr. Falwell in his 70s was as energetic as a 350-pound pasty white hypocrite poisoned by 60 years of hair care products can be. Ha ha. Keep it up. I'm listening to this right on through Lycus today. Rob. Yeah, you know that Tom is going to be all over this, too. All right.
What about the humorous side of Jerry Falwell? Let's look into that, shall we?
I think we're
sitting outside a hotel that has those revolving doors. And every time I was with him and I would go through a revolving door behind him, he would stop the door and I would bump into the glass.
What a card. All right. There's a cheap joke that I could make there, but I'm not going to do it. Let's see. What else do we have here? People are obsessed with the idea that there's going to be a photo of a guy trying to give Jerry Falwell mouth-to-mouth. Rick, one has to wonder if nutcase Reverend Fred Phelps will attend Jerry Falwell's funeral. That is true.
Yep.
Falwell supported President Bush, and Phelps believes Bush to be in league with Satan. Oh, how great would that be? Because, you know, Fred Phelps shows up at everybody's funeral everywhere.
He does.
You know, and he holds, you know, he holds
up. I hope he attends mine.
Holds, we should request right now that he attend all of our funerals. I should put in a request right now.
How do we do that?
I don't know. How did they, do they even have phones out there? Most people even have, they even have electricity?
But you call Central and ask Mabel to connect you.
Can you, I'm sorry, can you put me through to Applewood 352? The, can I use that? Send us to General Delivery Care of Crazyville. I've mentioned this before, but since we're talking about nutcase preachers, if you want to really terrify yourself when you're done reading that wiki on the Columbine kids, mm-hmm. read the Wikipedia entry about Fred Phelps and his family. That will scare you to your core. I mean, that will just, and the story of just, I mean, his kids bent over the bathtub while he just beat them with a big heavy stick. I mean, just that guy is all kinds of crazy. And for you Stephen King fans in the house, if you've seen the movie Creepshow recently, that guy, the guy in the beginning that Aunt Bedelia kills with the ashtray, whatever the hell his name is, the old guy who says he was sitting there in the chair and hitting his chair with the can and saying, "Bedelia, bring me my cake." That's exactly what Fred Phelps looks like. Let's see. We'll get, yeah, so Phelps believes Bush to be in league with Satan. If Bush goes to the, well, see, if Bush goes to Falwell's funeral, that will probably mean that they don't allow Phelps there. There'll be security risk.
Uh-huh.
So we should root for Bush not to go to the funeral so that Fred Phelps will be there. Because then it's just sort of, then the whole universe might just implode in on itself down to a singularity. That would just be fantastic. All right, here's Tim Riley.
So tributes continue to pour in, and we'll be sifting through those, including David Faustino, Married with Children. Oh, this is unrelated. I'm sorry. Maybe David didn't even know him.
Yeah.
He was arrested over the weekend. And he looks terrible.
Who?
David Faustino, Bud from Married with Children.
Oh, Married with Children.
Yeah. He was nabbed after police found him allegedly drunk and arguing with his estranged wife in the middle of a Florida street. So this is a Florida story.
Of course.
He was arrested for public drunkenness and also claimed they found a baggie containing a gram of marijuana on his person. He's 33 years old, booked and released on bail. He filed for divorce from his wife of about 3 years. The actress... This doesn't make sense. Faustino filed for divorce from his wife of about 3 years, actress-producer Andrew Elmer, in February. Her name is Elmer?
Yeah.
I mean,
really?
Andrew Elmer?
So that's how it is in Florida.
Okay.
You know, this is more of that godlessness Jerry Falwell's talking about.
That's what it says.
David and Andrew, living together.
All right. He also asked that all property acquired during their marriage be kept as his sole and separate property.
Okay. Rick, Christopher Hitchens was featured heavily on an episode of Penn & Teller's BS about Mother Teresa and Gandhi were terrible people. I love Christopher. Who else? I mean, really, you know, here's the thing about Mother Teresa. Never mind. She's been dead a long time. I'm not going to trample on. This is pointless.
Well, she died the same week as somebody else famous, but I can't remember.
Princess Diana.
Oh, yeah.
Because Princess Diana, one of them, who died first? One of
Princess
them died.
Diana.
Princess Diana, and then, but like Mother Teresa's death was overshadowed.
Yeah.
Mother Teresa, who's contributing, who's...
Well, it was a garden variety death, nothing.
Her, well, she was like 1,000 years old, too. She looked like Methuselah in a dress. I mean, Mother Teresa's enduring and continuing gift to the poor people was her constant, this sort of constant entreaty to them to embrace their poverty. And by the way, never use a condom. That's the way to cure your AIDS and poverty, is to never use a rubber, ever. He says, you can tell Chris Hitchens is one of those intellectuals who's so smart that it annoys them to even talk with people. He has a perpetual, you, sir, are a dumbass look on your face. You're right, he really does. All right. Is this more calls about the, is this a call about Mr. White Man from earlier? I totally want to get that guy on the show as like a recurring bit. Find out, you know, what does the white man have to say about this? And then it's actually a guy named White Man.
That is humorous.
See, it's funny. We should start blaming him for everything. He will blame him, an actual guy.
Yeah, he's really going to want to come
on. A guy named White Man. All right. Well, let's just take this call first. Why, John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, and how is your day going on this fine Tuesday?
Well, I've got the left arm tan from driving, which is real nice.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Hey, listen, I am no big supporter of Jerry Falwell, but, dude, the guy's dead. I mean, you're like almost piling on to this guy. Anyone related with him or anyone has anything good to say about him?
They're not listening to this station in the first place if they're related to Jerry Falwell. Let's not delude ourselves. He was a bad person who did bad things.
Well, Well, I haven't heard a whole lot of bad. I've heard some comments he made, but I haven't heard that he hurt me.
Well, would you like to know some of the bad things?
Sure.
He was early on, especially in his career, he was an avid segregationist. He blamed 9/11 on gays and feminists.
So what? Who cares? It's a comment. Big deal. Obviously, that's not true.
No, he's free to say it, but I'm free to point out that...
So he's going
to
hammer on Rosie O'Donnell, who's the biggest idiot in the world, who says it was caught by our guys
We do that, too. Sir, what show do you listen to?
I listen to yours every day. I'm just saying. It sounds like you're piling on a dead guy. That's all.
We absolutely are, and I will continue to do so for the rest of the day.
Okay, cool.
We piled on Rosie O'Donnell last week. Oh, I see. There you go. Thanks. Yes. Thanks so much. Thanks for that. Thank you.
I'll continue where you left off.
Seriously. Oh, he called. Let's see. What else? He was an outspoken supporter of apartheid. Unless I'm wrong about this, I'm pretty sure. Who's that? Is it Bishop Desmond Tutu? Bishop Desmond Tutu. Who, by the way, is a Nobel Peace Prize winner for fighting apartheid. Called Desmond Tutu a phony. So, yeah. Bad guy. Did bad things. His legacy will continue to be more bad things, and I will continue to pile on him as long as I want to, sir. It's 503-733-2970. Let's get Darren here on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yo.
Hey.
Hey, I got a comment on not the actual white man, but in general,
So this is, let's draw a distinction. You're not blaming things on white man from earlier. You're blaming things on whitey.
Actually, I'm blaming things on my Samoan girlfriend. So.
No.
Okay, let's do this.
What are you calling about, sir?
Well, we are buying your excellent product that you endorse, Vito, in the Vancouver area. Yes. And there's a Asian clerk that was helping us.
Now, hold on.
What?
Hold on a second. I'm going to give you a second to ponder whether you want to say what you're about to say. All right, thank you. Yeah, hold on. No. All right, now, having pondered it, do you still feel like this is something you ought to say?
I think it would be a benefit to all your listeners everywhere.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so we're getting ready to make a purchase of the Vigor.
Yeah,
Vigor. And,
Yes.
So, the agent clerk is...
No. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
We haven't been on the show a long time
ago.
We're all 12.
We're all stocked up here with that for the day. All right. Oh, really? Do we have to break? All right. Okay. We'll come back.
It's 12:32. We haven't taken the 20.
Now, should we close the snuff watch?
I guess we can, yes.
Well, sadly, let's close
the life has to go on as Jerry Fall would have wanted it to be.
Life is for the living. Let's close the snuff watch. But, of course, we will have more Jerry Falwell updates throughout the day.
And don't forget, these things happen in threes.
It is true.
So that's number one.
Who will be next? You know, Paris, you know, only two meals a day and not a lot of water is enough to kill a gazelle. Mm. And you are no gazelle, Paris.
That goes for you too, Lindsay Lohan.
That guy yesterday said, from the nose down, she looks good. From the nose up, she looks like about a beaten Southeast housewife. 503-733-2970. Let's take a break. Back after this.
The ACLU's got to take a lot of blame for this.
Oh, yeah.
And I know I'll hear from them for this, but throwing God off successfully with the help of the federal court system, yes. Throwing God out of the public square, out of the schools, the abortionists have got to bear some burden for this because God will not be mocked, and when we destroy 40 million little innocent babies, we make God mad. I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen.
our program. Thank you for coming by. 503-733-2970. As we remember the life of Jerry Falwell. In 1984, he was ordered to pay pro-gay activist Jerry Sloan $5,000 after losing a court battle. During a TV debate in Sacramento, California, Falwell denied calling the gay-oriented metropolitan community churches, quote, a vile and satanic system that will one day be utterly annihilated and there will be a celebration in heaven. When Sloan produced a tape of the comments, Falwell then refused to pay the judgment. He's all classed at Jerry Falwell. Anyway, the judge told him to pound sand and, like, double the fine, by the way. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Got some breaking news. Shots have been fired in a North Portland house. That's prompted a CERT team to come into the neighborhood. This is the 8800 block of North Wayland. Apparently, a gunshot came from inside the house. Nearby, Rosa Parks Elementary School is in lockdown mode.
At least they're reporting it this time.
Yeah.
You know, the weird thing is that story about the... I don't have it in front of me. That story that we had yesterday about the dead body that was found underneath, like jammed into the slats of the porch.
Mm-hmm.
The weird thing is that story just vanished. And I got an email from the neighbor, from the person next door to that house, who she was describing the layout of the house, and she noted that, you know, that in her estimation, it was clearly not like a suicide. Now, that was her estimation. She's like, you know, if you were going to kill, she's like, if you saw the body there, you would realize this is not how you would kill yourself. That it did look like it was not, in her estimation, from natural causes. And yet, there's just no discussion of it. It's completely weird. What's even weirder is I find myself strangely obsessed with this fingernail Sarah gave me. Right here.
You're a weirdo.
No, at the beginning of the show, Sarah has she has these acrylic nails, and one of them came off, and she tossed it at me at the beginning of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just holding it in my hands. I'm the clutch, and I'm, like, actually using it.
Isn't it weird looking?
I'm holding it in my hands, and I'm actually waving the fingernail at people to emphasize particularly strident points that I make here. Just now, as I was talking about the dead body, I have the fingernail clutched in my hands, and I'm using it as sort of a laser pointer. And it doesn't look like suicide, I say, waving the fingernail for emphasis. It's a strange day. Listen, hold on. Here's the sound of Sarah's fingernail.
Oh, that's wrong. Don't do that.
Now, why is that wrong?
It hurts.
Is it weird if I use my fingernail? Yes.
Yeah, I just don't like the sound of fingernails on anything.
I wonder if I brought in a chalkboard, if I could use this disembodied fingernail to scrape the chalkboard.
That would be fun. Let's do that tomorrow. It's sweeps week, you know.
When they take them off today, I'll bring the collection for you.
We should totally... Okay.
I already lost the thumb, though.
Can I... Thumbnail.
No, actually, I have the thumb
at
home.
You lose the thumb.
I have the thumbnail at home.
Oh, I just broke it. Oh, unfortunately.
Oh, the fun.
Hey, just as a side note, before we continue with... And by the way, if you're calling in, Scotty has typed a note on the screen. Be right back. He's gone. So if you're calling, the calls are auto-holding. You'll be screened in a second. He's out back smoking crack. What was I going to say? Oh, so if you have not gone to 970.am and signed up to become a glorious bastard, you got to do that. Sign up to become an AM 970 glorious bastard right now at 970.am.
How does one qualify?
You just have a pulse.
Oh.
I think you might have to be 18, but I'm not entirely sure about that. And we, you know, of course, we don't like send you know, spam or anything. We don't sell your address. It's just so we can keep you in the know, keep you in the loop, abreast. And then every week we select a glorious bastard of the week and you win a big pile of crap. I've also decided, though, I was thinking about this. What we're going to start doing is every week we select a glorious bastard of the week, and then, you know, we give you a big box of crap. I've decided that every so often we're just going to throw in a random personal item from one of our homes. So, like, I have this bottle of paprika at home I never use. I think I might just put that in the next prize pack. See you in the prize pack, and then, like, some paprika and, like, a pair of socks from my house. And then, so what we'll do...
Oh, I have a lot of stuff I can bring in.
We'll save your fingernails.
I'm not going to give away my fingernails.
Here's
gross.
Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
And more comments continue to trickle in here. It says the Reverend Pat Robertson, who's still alive, of Jerry Falwell, he was a tower of strength on many of the moral issues that have confronted our nation.
It's true.
Okay, so gas prices are starting to take their toll. As a matter of fact, women in minivans in the suburbs are striking out.
Well, that's not right.
No. Well, a woman is facing a hit-and-run charge after deputies said she knocked over a lady gasoline attendant with her minivan Washington County deputies say Sarah Harrington became angry at the attendant at Chevron on Northwest Murray Boulevard, refusing to fuel her minivan. The attendant, Diane Biller, said Harrington didn't sign her credit card and she didn't have any identification. Well, that's a good thing, Diane.
Oh, this is great. Now, this is...
No, that's messed up because you know how hard those gas station attendants work. And yeah. She's only screwing him, not the government.
No, I'm saying that it's great that the woman got caught.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's... No. Right. Let me clarify this right now. In no way am I siding with the woman in the minivan. Right. She's obviously a very bad person. No, a gas attendant... And, you know, and I'm not going to do some stupid talk show about, like, you know, who do you tip and who don't you tip?
I tip
gas station attendants, though. And you know what? You can either do it or not do it. I'm not telling everybody. You know, whatever. You find your own way there. That is your own moral compass. I tip gas station attendants. There's a gas station by my house. And you know the sad thing is when I tip gas station attendants, they're always sort of surprised by it. Because you can tell that no one ever does it. Like, oh, you know, if it's $20, I'll give the guy 21, and I'll there you know, like, and it's just a buck. I mean, you can't even buy anything with it. No. But the guys are always like, hey, thanks, you know, and it's so sad that you can tell no one. Those guys work harder than anybody in this room most of the time. You know, they're out there when it's hot, they're out there when it's cold.
And there's only, like, one of them for, like, a dozen bays.
Yeah, for, like, 12 different cars. You go home covered in gas, your hands are all effed up, you're either sunburned or you're frostbitten. So what is it that the gas attendant did or did not do that angered this idiot woman?
So, if you don't have your credit card signed, I don't serve you unless you show me your identification.
Well, yeah.
It's your gas, not mine. Biller said the woman banked the minivan out so fast that the driver's side mirror knocked her down. Police said a co-worker took down the license plate and police went after the driver. So, she's okay.
So did the woman try to buy gas without ID?
Well, she wouldn't present her ID and her credit card wasn't signed.
Well... Up yours, lady.
That's what I say.
You know, first of all, and I don't get the whole thing here because we got other. So Jerry Falwell, in a last act of bastard-like defiance, ate up about 35 minutes of our news hour.
Well, this won't be any fun tomorrow.
No, it's true. The hell was I saying? When I go to buy something with my credit card or my debit card, I always make a point of thanking them when they ask me for my ID. Mm-hmm. It's amazing the number of things you can buy and the amount of money you can rack up on a credit card with nobody bothering to check that you are actually the person who's supposed to have the card. You know, so that woman can pound it. That woman can just, she can suck a big bag of it is what she can do. So, F her. Let's see. Oh, Susan Reynolds has clarified about the Glorious Bastards. You don't have to be 18 to be a Glorious Bastard. You can be a 13-year-old Glorious Bastard, though something tells me that 13-year-olds should be in school and not listening to the Rick Emerson Show. And that's what she says. I don't really care.
Does he have a little sound on the spikes, a Glorious Bastard in training?
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's see. What else do we have here? These are phone calls about something or other. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you?
Well, I don't know. I almost want to talk about the gas station attendants now, but I was calling because I'm curious as to why they always refer to him as the Reverend Jerry Falwell. You know, there's almost seems like a wrestling tagline.
I do believe that Reverend is actually, now I'm going to have to look it up now because you're perplexing me. Hold on. Dictionary.com. I'm going to look it up right now because I do believe that Reverend is not only a title, but it's actually a descriptor. I believe it is actually an adjective of some kind. But you know what? Now that you say that, I might just be making that up. Hold on. I'm looking it up right now. I don't actually know the answer to that. Let me look right now.
Well, while you're looking, I can talk about gas station attendants.
Go ahead, sir.
I say get rid of them.
Okay.
Well,
you mean just make it all like the you pay thing?
Like California.
Yeah.
Like Washington. I love going to Washington to get my gas because I don't have to wait forever to get it done.
What kind of person are you? You are the only... Quick show. Okay, let's go around the room quickly. Do you enjoy having your gas pumped for you?
Not especially.
Tim? I'd rather do it myself.
See, am I the only one?
Yeah.
I'll wait in the car. I'll take the extra 5 minutes waiting so that I don't have to get out of the car and reek of gas for the rest of the day. You know, maybe I'm the only one. We should do, I'm going to write this down. Well, all kinds of things we're not getting through today. Instapoll, re-gas. I mean, gas isn't going to be any cheaper, you know.
Well, I know, but see, for me, it's all about convenience. I don't want to sit there and wait 5 minutes to have somebody pumping my gas. You know, even if you have two or three of those guys out there, I don't mind them doing it. I just mind waiting forever. And then when the pump clicks, you have to wait another 3 or 4 minutes for them to actually come take the thing off.
I suppose. I mean, I guess I try to always get my gas late at night. That's the thing. I try to never get my gas in, like, rush hour. If I have to get gas, I try to do it, like, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night after dark sometime, because then it's the odds are, you know, there's only me and, like, maybe one other person there. All right, by the way, we have now from dictionary.com, it is an adjective, two. Adjective, worthy of being revered, entitled to reverence. So it is sort of, it's like, it is a synonym for esteemed.
Yeah, well.
So that's why you sometimes hear, especially in the South, the very reverend, you know, so forth.
Well, they don't do it. I never hear them do it with Jesse Jackson, though. They don't say the Reverend Jesse Jackson. They just say Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Well, I wonder if anybody can be a reverend. I mean, do you have to, it's not like being a doctor, right? Like, can anybody just say that they are a reverend?
Sure, why not?
Can I be the Reverend Rick Emerson?
Yes.
Hey, okay. I like that. You got to do a show where you are the Reverend Rick Emerson.
I think that's going to be this show, and I think it's going to start right now. All right. All right, there you go. Yeah, thank you. All right, excellent. Thank you.
Eric.
All right. I'm just going to be the Reverend. Is it better if it's me or is it if it's the Reverend Scotty J, the Reverend Tim Riley?
The Reverend Scotty J.
The Reverend Tim Riley. How do you feel about that?
I like it.
All right, the Reverend Tim Riley.
I'm all for family values.
The Reverend Tim Riley. Occasionally, I will augment that by calling you the very Reverend Tim Riley. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here's the Reverend Tim Riley with you. It flows. It really has got a good snap to it. I like it.
It's very snappy.
The Reverend Tim Riley at the AM 970 news desk.
That guy, Hughes, is striking the woman in the head with a hammer at Fred Meyer. He is lashing out. He did so in court, complaining about the food. Eric Osterholm told the judge, "I am being force-fed meals that cause a heart attack." Maybe she needs vegan. He says, "I am a pre-diabetic. I have talked."
I mean, he's planning on being diabetic.
I guess so. I have talked to two nurses that are telling me that that it's going to continue until they decide otherwise. But I'm not going to go along with these procedures till I start getting food that is safe to eat. Do you hear me?
Oh, hammer you! I like him. He's got spunk.
He does.
He does seem irascible. Rick, why do we even have gas pumps? I wait 5 minutes for them when I could swipe my own debit card and have Nature's Sweet vehicle nectar in 10 seconds. I suppose. I thought it was just sort of known because it's just here in New Jersey where they pump it for you. But I guess my laziness just overcomes my desire for efficiency. I think that's my thing. Rick. This email just says Mother Teresa was hot as balls. And then the body of the email says, "I'm right, you know." Yes, you are, sir. Here's the Reverend Tim Riley.
Well, for the second consecutive year, rude Miami drivers have won that city the title of worst road rage in a survey released today. Portland ranked as the city with the friendliest drivers. The most courteous drivers are to be found in Portland, the Seattle-Tacoma area, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Dallas-Fort Worth, just to mention a few. Portland drivers were the least likely to see other motorists tailgating on the roadways, and St. Louis motorists were the least likely to swear at other drivers. Other cities to top the rude driver list were New York, Boston, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C.
Well, there's no surprise there.
Meanwhile, Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council says Jerry Falwell knew what he believed.
Kind of hard set in his ways, which he was, but he's a very,
Tony
very loving,
yeah.
Friendly,
Tony Perkins.
Happy guy.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
He had a love for his fellow man.
If you ever walked with him across the Liberty campus, you couldn't get maybe 10, 15 feet, another student would come up and give him a hug.
Yeah, 12 rooms, 12 vacancies.
He loved America.
He was a very loving, very patriotic man who I think had a tremendous impact upon this nation for the better.
I don't have I'm trying to come up with a third Anthony Perkins psycho quote. I have nothing. I failed.
A skull has been found in Multnomah Falls. It's now in the hands of a forensic anthropologist who is hoping to determine the approximate age and identity of the skull. It's reported to be intact and in good condition. It's been at the location for decades, apparently. No other remains are found. There is speculation that the find could be archaeological, but that cannot be determined until the completion of a forensic examination. Meanwhile, the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office has opened a case until it's determined whether or not a crime has been committed.
Multnomah Falls is weird. You can't get... That is a boring story. You know, I was going to make some stupid observation about Nomo Falls, but I'm going to stop now. Stop it, and I'm just going to scrap this whole thing. Here's the Reverend Tim Riley.
Well, let's talk about Mario Lopez, shall we? The former Dancing with the Stars runner-up. He's reportedly taking the next step with his rumored girlfriend, Karina Smirnoff. According to People magazine, the pair are now living together. When asked last week about the status of he and Smirnoff's relationship, Lopez was playing it coy.
The other thing my mom has offered me is to be a gentleman, and gentlemen don't ever kiss and tell. So, you know, you should keep your private life private, right?
Shut your hole. All right, here's hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How we doing?
What's up?
Hey, I was just calling to let you know that it's true. Anybody can be a reverend. I am, in fact, an ordained minister in the Universal Life Church.
Now, that's one of those things where, like, is that you, like, you send away for that at the back of Rolling Stone magazine?
Actually, no. You can do it online now. It's a free service that the Universal Life Church has been providing for years for, like, a whole religious freedom thing. And, I mean, I've actually performed two legal weddings for friends over the years since I became ordained in 97.
Now, see, I always hear about this. You always hear about people who are like, well, I'm an ordained, you know, Universal Life Church, blah, blah, blah. But you can't really do anything. Like, you couldn't, like, if you tried to claim tax-exempt status, the government would beat your ass, right?
Well, no, you would actually have to, have a chartered church with the Universal Life Church. You would have to have a minister, a secretary, and then something else. It has to be at least a three-body church. Well, but, yeah, you could actually do that, too.
But why, legal. Why haven't you done that, then? You don't have to pay any taxes, then.
Well, I'm too lazy.
All right. God bless you.
All right, man. Have a good day.
Okay. Thank you. He's honest. All right, here's the Reverend Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, it's time to say goodbye to Bob Barker. No, no, it's not what you're thinking. He is going to be on here with not one but two television specials tonight. The, let's see. Oh, these are Wednesday, so that's tomorrow. The first airs at 8 o'clock on CBS. It's called The Price is Right Million Dollar Sweepstakes. The TV event will be Barker's final appearance in primetime as host of the longest-running game show in television history. A special edition will feature contestants with a chance to win bigger and better prizes, including $1 million. Then Thursday, it's Bob Barker, a celebration 50 years on television, showcasing the 83-year-old's personal reminiscences about his years in the business, including 35 years on The Price is Right. That's on at 8 o'clock, and it'll take a look at classic Price is Right games. Barker is due to host his last Price is Right coming up in June.
All right, let's see what we've got here. Rick, about one punk under God. Jimmy, this is the show that Jim Baker's kid does. Jimmy Baker actually doesn't get along with his dad. He reunited with James Baker after 5 years of not speaking. He gets along with Tammy Faye, though. That's why he's pissed at dad, because of treating her badly. But his dad and him got on an off-camera fight because Jamie has no problems with homosexuality, where James thinks, of course, they will all burn. And Jamie Baker, by the way, is bald with those stupid thick black glasses that young kids wear to look smart and cool. Plus, he's got tons of tattoos and all over his arms, blah, 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 blah. So there you go. Speaking of which, you know, I wonder what is Jessica Hahn doing these days? I don't even remember the last time I even heard what Jessica Hahn is doing.
Oh, yeah.
Probably
selling purses somewhere.
Well, that's what they all do, right? That's what Monica Lewinsky ended up doing, selling a line of handbags. You know who else sells handbags? Shoshana Lonstein, which is that girl that Jerry Seinfeld's with for the longest time. Handbag making is really, that's like the fallback position for all females. If you slept with somebody,
you can decide what to do next.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is,
there's an entire Sex and the City episode about handbags being the fallback career.
That's totally, especially if you've, like, stripped somebody famous. All right, here's the Reverend Tim Riley. We'll do one more, then we'll break.
Lindsay Lohan is tops on Maxim's Hot 100 list. The 20-year-old earned the number one spot after finishing third last year. Rounding out the top 10 for the 8th annual list are actresses Jessica Alba, Scarlett Johansson, pop star Christina Aguilera, actresses Jessica Biel, Ali Larter, Eva Mendes, and singer Rihanna. Actress Eva Longoria, who was number one in 2005 and 2006, and pop star Fergie also made the ranking. The entire list is available at MaximOnline.com or in the latest Maxim issue, which is out on the 22nd.
I've got that list here somewhere. You know, the weird thing is that list just seems like it's from 2005. It doesn't even seem to have changed.
Yeah, they move a couple around.
Let's see. Lindsay Lohan, according to Maxim, is the hottest woman in the world. I suppose that's if you've been blinded somehow or haven't actually seen any photos of her recently. I mean, I guess really the only thing maybe that you could find attractive about Lindsay Lohan at this point is she seems sufficiently trashy that the odds are about 1 in 3 she'd just be ripped out of her mind on something and you'd be able to have your way with her. There is no other... I don't even care about enough about this to read it. I started to read it and
the magazine comes out on the 22nd.
I don't even care enough to read this. You know, the only thing funny about this list, hottest 100 hottest women in the world. Ashley and Jessica Simpson are on the list. And yet, only one of the Olsen twins. Ashley Olsen is 37. Mary-Kate, who is a twin. They're identical twins.
Hmm.
The other one didn't make the cut. That's just absurd. All right, take a break here. We'll come back. More ahead from the Reverend Tim Riley. We have Jim Roop from CNN in Los Angeles. Top five rock anthems of all time. Dennis Pitsenbarger, Scotty J, and your phone calls. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. It is Tuesday. Coming up later on, CNN Radio correspondent James Roop will also do today's top five rock and roll anthems. Top five rock anthems as we endeavor to write the official anthem of the city of Portland, Oregon. I got this. I'm just going to real quickly talk about this Lindsay Lohan on Maxim's Hot 100 thing, and then I'm never going to talk about it again. This is from the Associated Press. Tim just talked about this. According to Maxim magazine, Lindsay Lohan is the hottest woman in the world.
See, I would have agreed with that at a time, and that is not this time.
No, hasn't been this time.
Do you remember
forever?
Yeah, you know, when she had dark hair and she was tan, and she just looked so beautiful.
Here's when she looked beautiful. I will tell you this. There's two times when Lindsay Lohan has looked beautiful. One is that photograph they always show where she looks like Anne Margaret, where she's kind of sort of turning and looking over her right shoulder, and she's very carefully posed, which I think is the one that Maxim. It's this one. This photo right here that Maxim actually uses. This photograph of Lindsay Lohan right here is where she looks really hot. That's a famous photograph of her.
Yeah, see, I think a little past that. I think like 6 months after that.
She looks at, and there's
a, that's Mean Girls, Lindsay Lohan, right?
I don't know. There's a photograph of her that went around the net where she's sitting, and I guess apparently it was. They claim it was just sort of a candid photo, that it wasn't really staged. In other words, it wasn't part of a photo shoot. It's her in a bedroom sitting on a bed in a bathing suit with a guy's legs behind her. And I don't know, nobody knows who the guy is, but it's her sitting on a bed in a two-piece bathing suit. I know that sounds creepy. But but in the background, you can see some guy, some legs sitting on the bed or whatever. But it is apparently kind of a candid photograph. It is not a professionally staged photo. She just looks smoking. I mean, she's unbelievably hot. But man, What does Bruce Campbell say? Baby, you got real ugly.
All right, I'm going to find you this stage, though. I thought she was really pretty.
All right, I'm going to just quickly do this, and we'll talk to Jim Roop here. Anyway, so that's why this list just seems like it's from 2 or 3 years ago. Because it's just all the usual suspects. I mean, really, Jessica Alba. Who's sitting around thinking about Jessica Alba in 2007? Look, I do her. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, it seems like we ought to have moved on. She's followed in order by Scarlett Johansson. You know, I saw a photo of Scarlett Johansson the other day where she looked flat out weird. I think Scarlett Johansson is a great body. And I know that I sound retarded talking about this because I'm in no position to throw stones. And it clearly, I mean, it's not as though I would give it even a second's hesitation. But I mean, I sound like one of those guys on those Am I Hot shows where it's like some unbelievably stunning woman is brought in and the guy finds like one tiny like square centimeter of cellulite like on one of her legs and like, oh, you're hideous. Look at this tiny, almost imperceptible flaw I found. I know I sound dangerously close to that, but here's the thing. Scarlett Johansson's hot and all, but I saw some photographs of her the other day, and it wasn't just one, it was several. I think she is dangerously close to being a butterface, and you just can't really spot it. I think it's the way that she is posed. No. I'm saying, you get her at the right angle, she's hot. I think you get her at the wrong angle, and I think she's Lucas Haas with boobs. That's all I'm saying. Next time you look at Lucas Haas, he was that little kid in Witness, and he was in Brick, he was in Leap of Faith. Next time you look at Lucas Haas, try to picture him with big bosoms. You're going to see Scarlett Johansson.
I know who he is, and she does not look like him.
Okay.
You're nuts.
Scarlett Johansson, Christina Aguilera. It's so hard to tell what she even looks like because she's got 3 inches of makeup on. You want to give her a good hosing. you know, with a hose. And you see what she really looks like. I don't even really know what Christina Aguilera looks like. It's all cosmetics on her. Jessica Biel, Ali Larter, Eva Mendes, Rihanna, Eva Longoria, Fergie. Fergie's only hot because she just looks so unbelievably slutty. Sienna Miller, Angelina Jolie.
I think I know somebody who could weigh in on this topic.
Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from Los Angeles, CNN radio correspondent and living deity, James Roop. Hello, sir.
Yeehaw.
Oh, that's right. You're in Las Vegas today. Forgot all about that. How's life in Sin City, my friend?
It's hotter than crap out here.
What is it? What's the temperature on the ground?
It's got to be 150.
Jesus.
I think it's 90 something.
Jesus.
It's a dry heat.
No. I remember getting off the plane there, and it was like 98 in the air. But it's like literally, if you were to put a thermometer down to the ground, it was like 140, you know, degrees or just like on the tarmac.
You feel the heat through your shoes.
Yeah, I mean, it just radiated back up you, and I mean, back up at you. It really was like walking across a. You were like walking across a skillet.
I can't believe these morons walking around in these big old boots and big hats. That's the weirdest thing.
Well, you know, the thing about Vegas is, and a lot of those are first timers. Not like I'm some Vegas like veteran or whatever, but I've been there a bunch of times. The thing about Vegas is, if you're coming from somewhere else for the first time, you don't really appreciate exactly how unbelievably hot it is. You don't really grasp that it is like a desert. And so I remember going to Las Vegas from Salt Lake City. And I remember going in and it was winter. It was January in Salt Lake. And so I had like my full-on parka on. Parka, like layers of clothes, you know, and the big-ass like hunting socks. I get off the plane and I walk out, and I mean, it was really like walking into a sweat lodge. I mean, I kept expecting like the great spirit eagle god to appear to me or something.
Yeah, I came here, first time I did it, it was 81. It was July. And the strip was pretty bare at the time. And I could see the circus sign from where I was staying at the Sahara. And I
right.
Well, it looks pretty close. I think I'll just walk over there.
No.
Well, because the sign's so freaking big, it just looks close. So I must have walked 2 miles, man, and I don't think I had a dry spot on me by the time I got there.
No, it's like you feel like you're in Ishtar. You know what I mean? It's just going to be flaking away by the time. We did that. God, my wife and my friend. Well, you met Clyde Lewis when you were here. My friend,
yeah.
Clyde, and my wife, my then girlfriend, now wife and I, we were in Vegas. We did the same thing, man. We were just such idiots. We had no sense of scale or spatial relation or distance, because that town messes with your head, because as you said, everything is so big and everything seems like it's just over there. And I remember we walked from, God, where did we walk from? It was some insane, like we wanted to go to this place called the Elvis-O-Rama, which is this Elvis museum, because it's right by the Liberace Museum, which I also wanted to see, because they have the world's largest rhinestone there. And so, and also these bicentennial hot pants that he wore in 1976. So we started off at like the MGM Grand or something, and you know, we're like, well, it's right over there in that building. How far could it be? And the answer is really unbelievably absurdly far. And we walked along, and I swear to God, it's like you're seeing those whatever, you know, you're seeing like those elk skulls, you know, on the ground alongside the road. You start to feel like you're in one of those little, like you're in a bad Far Side or something. So, all right, where does CNN put you up when you stay in Vegas?
I'm at the MGM Grand.
Oh, see, the MGM, that's a fine place.
Well, I don't know, man. Everything's so expensive now. I mean, even if I want to watch ESPN, it's going to cost me $9.95. They'll give me 3 channels.
Is that true? They don't give you like the, well, because I guess they want to either get your money that way or send you down to the casino.
Yeah, but who does not gamble when they're here? Who does not? And my rate's $199 a night. I don't know what the regular going rate is, but I'm here because of the award show. That's expensive. They don't have any in-room coffee or any of that crap. So they're making their money. I don't understand why it's so tight.
Well, and the thing is, you know, the other thing about Vegas, the thing that kills you is when you're there and it's like this trifecta of the heat, and you got to get somewhere far away, and then you got to take a cab. Because the cabs in that city are just unreal.
You could throw a rock, or so it seems anyway, from the MGM Grand to the airport, yet a taxi ride's $20.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. The taxis in that city are just, and especially because and this is the other thing, if you're staying at any sort of an upper-class place, if you're staying at any sort of an upper-tier hotel, getting from your room, like, to a casino, you pass 5 different guys who open a door and then put the hand out. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's just some guy, pardon me, sir. Guy does something. It's one thing if a guy, see, we were just talking about tipping earlier, and I swear to God I wasn't going to talk about it again because it's such a talk radio cliche. But it's one thing You go and ask a guy to perform a service for you, and he does it well or promptly, or he goes above and beyond the call of duty. It's another thing if a guy just does crap for you that you didn't ask him to do and then demands to be paid, you know? Puts the hand out and then guilt trips you because he wants
to... He doesn't guilt trip me. I just say, how you doing?
Oh, no, I have no, you know what, and I got to tell you, and it horrifies my wife when I do this, but I have no problem refusing to tip some people. If you do something for me that I did not ask you to do, if I'm in the bathroom, and I'm washing my hands, and I go to reach for a towel, and a guy, like, beats me to it and shoves a towel into my hand, I don't tip that guy.
That's
you know?
A favor.
Yeah, I mean, and I, you know, again, I don't mean to sound like a jerk about it, it's not like I'm being like a dick, but if I didn't ask you to perform the service, I will not pay you extra for it. It's not going to happen.
Yes.
Let's see. I'm just going to, real quickly, this list, this maxim list of the 100 hottest women.
Oh, yeah.
Fergie, Angelina Jolie, Beyonce Knowles, Allie Larder. Where do I know Allie Larder from, Sarah? What would I know Allie Larder? What's she been in?
I don't know. What's...
She's a, it's a name that, Jim Roop, Allie Larder, anything?
Don't know it.
Yeah, see, I know her from somewhere, but I don't know where. But the weirdest thing is, only one of the Olsen twins is on the list. It's just Ashley, not Mary-Kate.
Allie Larder, she's on Heroes right now, and she's also...
Oh, I remember her. She was a little girl in Remember the Titans.
Oh, really? Okay.
I know she was the one who wore the whipped cream bikini.
In Varsity Blues. Okay, that, I do know who you're talking about. She really is hot. And then number 29... Sarah Silverman. I know that there's a lot of guys who are into Sarah Silverman. I'm not one of them. But, you know, whatever. All right. I think I'm done with that. All right. So you're there for the Country Music Awards, right?
Yeah.
You know, country, speaking of hot women, country music is where all the hot female musicians are now.
Right now, that's true.
Yeah. It used to be that they would go into pop music. Now, it's, and I've said this over and over the years, the country music, it's like if you were an ugly musician, that was the place you could go. You could find refuge in the world of country. Now you have to be hot, even if you're a guy, you have to be hot to make it as a country star now.
It's a long ride from Minnie Pearl to Carrie Underwood.
Totally, no, it really
you know
is true.
Saying? I mean, with Loretta Lynn stopover, it's a long ride.
No,
Carrie Underwood and Faith Hill.
And even Loretta Lynn had those country teeth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Teeth jutting out like a bad fence everywhere. You're really...
That's good for eating apples, though.
You're really right, though. Boy, Carrie Underwood, have I asked you this before? And this is the part of the conversation that Sarah always sort of rolls her eyes
at. About her, ask me again. I don't care.
Well, have you seen her in person?
Yes.
Is she hot in person?
More so.
Even more so, because I got to tell
even
you.
Even more so.
She looks pretty flawless. I mean, in the photos I've seen of her, she looks just about perfect in a whole lot of ways.
Yeah, she is proportioned perfectly.
Yes.
And then when she turns that smile on you, you just melt.
She does have, she really does have, and I don't know whether she's an authentic country girl or whether it's sort of a shtick that she puts on, but I got to tell you, she does have that beautiful, radiant, 1,000-watt country girl smile. She really does. I don't really find like Faith Hill and stuff. It's a little bony for my taste. I don't find them to be all that attractive. You know who's hot though is what is that country act? The Wreckers. It's a duet. They sing that Take It With You When You Go. It's,
I know who you're talking about. They're not nominated for anything.
No, and it's that girl that I always think is, well, this is pointless. Nobody even knows what I'm talking about. And you know what? And just sitting there, I'm sitting here going on about my hot country music stars. Are the CMAs, is it just a living hell for you? Or are you just sitting there awash in tedium?
Oh, I hate this. I don't mind the music that much. I'm not a big country music fan.
Right.
But I've worked country. I worked the format before. So you wind up liking something you've done before.
Here's the thing. We were talking about this yesterday. We were talking about this yesterday, though, because Tim was a country jock, I was a country jock, Sarah wasn't a country jock, but did some work on a country radio station here, one of our former companies, you were a country jock, and you get those songs that, like, songs you don't, even the ones you hate, sometimes, especially the ones you hate, you end up knowing them word for word. I mean, it's kind of...
Well, I was a country jock in the early 90s when you were going from Hank Jr., Johnny Lee, into a Garth Brooks record.
Oh, yeah, and right
about... Right when that fusion was happening.
Right when the changeover was happening.
Yeah.
And see, and I got out of country radio right as Garth Brooks put out The Dance, And, you know, that was right. So, you know, the downside of that was, like, when I was a country DJ, there were no hot female listeners. They were all old and hideous. Because it was all, like, Bellamy Brothers records, you know. What is the worst country song you ever had to play?
Roy Acuff, Bluebird, I think is the name of it.
Roy Acuff?
Oh, my God.
Are you thinking, you're not thinking of Great Speckled Bird?
Could be. Well, he did like three or four bird songs.
Yeah, no, he sang Great Speckled Bird, I think, is the one you're thinking of. Weird. Did you ever have to play Baby's Got Her Blue Jeans On?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a terrible song. Also, did you ever have to play Swingin' by John Anderson?
Oh, of course. Yeah, she'll be swinging. Oh, my God. Now you're flogging my memory with pain.
We have identified that as the single worst country music song in the history of the planet.
That could well be it. That was the one-hit wonder for him, too, I think.
John Anderson sang Swingin'. He also sang a really terrible cover of Ray Charles' Busted. But I think that was it. I don't think he ever did anything like that. Boy, he was just a weird looking bastard too.
He was Charlie Daniels with an eating disorder.
I was gonna say he looks like a younger Colonel Sanders, but I mean I'll take yours too. I'd say pound for pound, the worst country songs of the last 50 years came from the Oak Ridge Boys, because everything they sang was just embarrassing.
Yeah, but they put out a boatload of them, man.
Yeah.
So did Alabama. Remember Alabama? All that crap?
Alabama, who were sort of interchangeable with the Oak Ridge Boys in my memory. We actually haven't even talked about the thing. Is there anything interesting or exciting expected to happen at this, or whatever, the Country Music Awards?
No, I'm expecting it to be over on time, and I expect to go home tomorrow earlier than I anticipated.
Fantastic. You can't ask for more than that, sir.
Hmm.
All right.
They better have food down there because I'm hungry.
Do they ever have, is there good craft service when you work these award shows?
I've never worked the ACMs. I have no idea.
All right.
You know, so I don't know what they're going to hand us. And if it's, you know, barbecue beef and beans, I'm going to be pretty pissed off.
Well, it's a country show, so it's, have some.
That's all I'm saying.
Have some cornbread.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Thank you very little.
Let's see, this guy, just a quick email from a guy, said, hey, tell Jim that I once walked from the Strip to the Rio. It was 110 degrees and it took 2 hours.
Oh, man. Poor guy. He's probably still recovering from that one.
The Rio is the one that sort of set off, right? It set off the Strip, and you think that it's like, again, way closer than it is, and it isn't at all.
So what I like is how they bolted all the windows shut, because they figure the guy loses all his money in the casino, he's going to jump out of these windows. That's the funniest thing to me.
Absolutely. Let's see.
They got big bolts on all four corners.
By the way, just two clarifications quickly before we go. The wreckers are Jessica Harp and Michelle Branch. That's what I'm thinking of. Michelle Branch. Terrible song. Just flat out hot, though. And finally, this guy wants to know if you have ever had the chance to see Dolly Parton in the flesh.
Yes.
Really? Now, is she... here's the thing.
She looks like she's had a lot of surgery.
She looks like a drag queen. I mean, there was a time, I think, when she was maybe naturally pretty, but it's so hard to tell because, I mean...
Oh, here's another worst country song. Islands in the Stream. Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton.
That's an awful song.
Yeah.
That's a terrible song. Tim Riley is giving that a huge, enthusiastic thumbs down.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. I agree.
That is an awful song. You're right. I mean, yeah. Kenny Rogers, a lot of those Kenny Rogers songs are terrible.
Yeah.
All right.
I like The Gambler. I think that's all right.
The Gambler's an okay song. It was an okay song the first 50,000 times that I heard it. So, the thing about Dolly Parton is, and this is her assessment, by the way, this is her assessment, not mine. Dolly Parton, by her own acknowledgement, modeled her look on Streetwalkers. So, I mean, when people say that she looks like a $2 whore, that really is exactly what she looks like, because she said that growing up, she would notice these prostitutes around her hometown, and she said she always really liked the way that they were dressed. So when you see Dolly Parton, as she once famously said, you know, it does take a lot of money to look that cheap, because she is really trying to look like a Mustang Ranch girl. So
yeah, well, she's succeeded in looking like the madam of the Mustang Ranch.
Yeah. There's some joke there about some salad dressing called Mustang Ranch. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I got nothing. All right. My friend, it doesn't sound like you're going to enjoy your night, but I'll say it anyway. Enjoy your night, Jim Roop.
Well, with each minute that passes by, it gets closer to being over.
Fantastic. If you ever get down tonight, just hum Islands in the Stream or Swing into yourself. Thank you, sir. There you go. Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen, in Las Vegas. Fantastic. All right. It's 503-733-2970. That is a terrible song. Let's see. What else do we have here? Let's see. Jessica Hahn is the live-in concubine of the guy that owns the Married with Children show, as reported on a recent Howard episode. And then he says, how does Fergie make the Maxim 100? Yet, there's no mention of Sarah. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's take a break here. We'll come back with the Reverend Tim Riley around the corner at the Ministry of Truth. Still coming up. Today's top five. Top five rock anthems of all time. Later on, Dennis Fitzenbarger and Like Is a Three, Donna Mike is 70. Stay there. It's the Rich Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. There's What Not to Wear. What is that other show? There's some show where they go through your house and you have to throw everything away and the only stuff you can keep.
Oh, Neat.
Is it Neat?
Yes, Neat.
It's a pretty great show, actually.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
No.
It's great. It's for people that are pack rats and that just got houses full of crap. And the deal is they put everything out on your lawn, like everything you own.
My favorite one was when they made the woman throw away her wedding dress even though her mother had worn it and the mother just died.
No, but the I'm telling you that's your favorite moment. My favorite moment was when the school for the blind burned down. But they put out a tarp on your lawn that's like 10 by 15, and everything you want to keep has to fit on that. You can't keep anything that doesn't fit on the tarp. And it's so great because it really is perverse. It really is satisfying because it's always just these hicks. It's always just like full on screaming white trash. And they're just keeping this furniture and it's always just like the worst, most hideous knick-knacky heirloom crap ever. And it really is satisfying to just see these sort of, and all the hosts on these shows seem to be variations on Simon Cowell. They're all just really mean, cruel, ruthless British people. Mm-hmm. We were talking about what not to wear. Last time I watched What Not to Wear. So just get off my back. The last time I watched that, they just had this poor woman at the mall, and she had the most unfortunately shaped body. It was just, she wasn't even so much pear-shaped. She was shaped like that bottle that Jeannie lived in, and I Dream of Jeannie, where she just was like, she went as it was a stick and then boom at the bottom. And they had this woman at, I don't know, the Gap or something, and just nothing was working. And about 5 minutes in, she just degenerated into a pile of tears and mascara. And it really.
Stacey and Clinton come in.
But you know what it is? They're sort of like, the hosts of that show are sort of like the shrink or the drill sergeant or maybe like that. Scientologists, where they're there just to break you down until you have no self-esteem left, and then they rebuild you in their own image.
But you get $5,000 to spend.
No, it's pretty great.
And you get a trip to New York. How can you beat that?
It's not a bad show. And it is, those shows are all a variation on the sort of Springer philosophy, which is that you can watch, and you just feel so glad that it's not you. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm glad that I'm not. And it's always at these stores where they're put in front of those three-paneled angled mirrors that shows you from every single side all at once under a big fluorescent light that shows every blemish and blister, pockmark, boil, pimple, zit you have ever had. So, by the way, this conversation all started with a discussion of Scotty's clothing today, which is, I kid you not, Sarah verified this, and please don't ask why I noticed this. Scotty is wearing, how shall I put this? It's a rather form-fitting shirt. It is a Nike mesh shirt which clings to every curve of his gut. And it's actually so tight.
He doesn't
tight.
Really have a gut.
Really?
He has a little one.
He holds it in. He sucks it in.
Does he?
You go by, look, here's the thing. Go by sometime when he's not really aware. Peer in the window. See, when he comes in here, he kind of does that. He sort of pulls it in. You go by and take a look at Scotty sometimes when he's not really, you can observe him in his natural environment, and he just does a, and just lets it all out. And man, it's like, it's rolling right. It's like crushed over the edge of a pie tin. It's right over the belt line. But his Nike mesh shirt is so tight and so see-through that I swear to God, even a casual glance at him and you can see his nipples. It's really unnerving. It's all
kind of, that's weird because I've rocked by Scotty like 20 times today and I didn't notice his nipples. You walk by once and you're like,
I don't know why.
It's a little weird.
I don't know. I walked in and for some reason it was the first thing that jumped out at me. Let's do this call and then we'll talk to the Reverend Tim Riley. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Worst country song in the world is this country song that my physics teacher in high school actually made us listen to during a test to, like, screw us up, called Your Wife is Cheating on Us.
Your Wife is Cheating on Us. By whom, sir?
I have no idea who it was. He had it on vinyl, and he just did it because it was a really, really bad song, and he did it to torment us because that was the kind of teacher he was.
And, you know, the thing is, in some of those country song titles, like, you'll see those lists that go around the internet of, like, wacky song titles, you know, and it's in it. And the song titles in country music are often so bad and so weird and so strange that you can't tell whether it's a joke or not. Country music is really alone in that category, in that you often can't tell what is a parody of country music and what is the real thing. You know what I mean?
Well, as far as I can tell, this guy was trying to be really serious because he had a whole record of songs that were basically based around that. I mean, kind of like that song that everyone knows, All My Exes Live in Texas.
Totally,
you know?
That's exactly it. So,
and as far as that top 100 list, I'm not sure why Fergie is on there, because if you've ever seen her when she's not wearing, like, 3 pounds of foundation, or if you just see her, like, real close up.
Or when she's wetting herself on stage.
Her face just looks like she took a header off of a motorcycle into a gravel pile. It's just all kinds of bad.
Genius. Really? Is that true?
Yeah.
She has meth face. She has meth face.
It's like having mush mouth.
She really was addicted to meth for years. You can see it in her face.
Really?
Mm-hmm. She's just got, like, she's got a bunch of BB holes in her face. I mean, she has full of pucks. It's bad. She is not attractive.
She's got Noriega face. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he is your president, prophet, seer, and revelator. He is the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Looks like Opie and Anthony will be on CBS tomorrow, but they have been suspended from XM Satellite Radio for 30 days.
So I'm confused about this, because...
So they're two different shows?
First of all, let's hear it for Satellite Radio being... I hope you're glad you're paying for that, being a bastion of free speech. So they do a five-hour show every day, 3 hours of it on satellite, 2 hours of it also on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So while Opie and Anthony, and this is because they had... As I understand it, they had some homeless guy on who was describing forcing himself on Condoleezza Rice sexually while punching her in the face.
Yes.
This, because, you know, they're kooky. And so they're being suspended from the satellite show, but they're going to continue to be on the radio?
Yeah, on CBS.
That's interesting. On CBS. I want to get an old Brent Musburger sounder of him saying, "This is CBS." And just play it every time something hideous is said. So, all right. Well, so there you go. So they're not being fired. They're just being suspended.
Yeah.
That sounds like equal parts placate whatever activist group is upset about this, probably involving Al Sharpton in some group. And publicity. I mean, that's, you know, that seems like what that's about.
Well, David Hasselhoff says he wishes he did some things differently during that videotaped drunken burger chopping episode. I wish I used a knife and fork, he said. That, according to journalist Piers Morgan.
Or a rubber.
A self-described good friend of Hasselhoff. According to Morgan, the former Baywatch star engages in endless self-aggrandizing and yet is an insecure man who just wants to be loved. I sit next to him in the makeup trailer and he's bordering on the obsessive about his personal appearance, said the close friend of David Hasselhoff.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, a cocktail waitress at the House of Blues, where Phil Spector met Lana Clarkson, took the stand in his murder trial today. Sophia Hogan was questioned by L.A. Deputy D.A. Patrick Dixon about the night Clarkson was killed. She said Spector seemed angry, but he left her a $450 tip and asked her out.
He asked if I wanted to go home.
Did that surprise you?
No, it didn't surprise me. It's a common question to ask.
And what was your response to Phil Spector's invitation?
I believe I said something to the fact that I thank you, but I can't go either. I had to work the next morning or I had a meeting.
Did you make that up?
Yes, I did.
All right. So this is what he didn't...
She's used to being asked out.
So this is... He didn't point a gun at her, though.
No. He left her a $450 tip and asked her out.
Okay. Well done.
So that's that. The eighth season of America's Next Top Model winner will be chosen tomorrow night on the CW, whatever channel that might be this week. The Fiverr, I think they showed on VH1, too. I think that's where I started over the weekend. The final three aspiring models include 20-year-old admissions advisor Jazeline from Chicago, Illinois.
I'm sorry?
Jazeline?
Pardon me.
Do you have any Jazeline?
No, I'm doing the great
thing. I
have
chap lips.
You put a little Jazeline on those, you'll be fine.
And a 21-year-old college student named Natasha from Dallas, Texas. 20-year-old Dion, who was eliminated last week, says she can't pick a winner.
I'm going to put my money on all three of them, but I'm going to say may the best model win because I don't want to choose, you know, anybody, you know, any particular one. You know, have the other one be mad at me or whatever, but, you know, I'm going to say may the best model win.
Dion said that the winning model will have to represent the total package.
I think you have to have great personality. You have to have awesome pictures. You have to be able to, you know, have great communication skills, definitely. And I also think that, you know, you have to be a great role model as well.
Boy, that's the most irritating voice I've heard in a long time. Have any of the models from the show done anything? Have they modeled anywhere for anything?
For America's Next Top Model?
Yeah.
They get a CoverGirl contract, so they do that.
The CoverGirl makeup?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so they do like a full spread ad in 17 magazine, and that's about it. I haven't seen any of the other ones ever after.
Is this, like, I've noticed this, that the first, but it's a great place to kill some time during the weekend when there's nothing else on. When you're waiting for, is it one of those when you're waiting for something better to come on television shows?
Yeah, there was nothing good on Saturday afternoon.
That's like
a, so I watch a marathon of these episodes.
That's like if you're flipping around and you'll watch some, like, I will find myself watching, like, you know what, I'm a sucker for programs that show how things are manufactured. Mm-hmm. You know, and it'll be like, it doesn't matter what it is. Could be handgun, could be Jelly Bellies, doesn't matter. If it's a program showing a factory where things are made, I'll watch that. Pin. Yeah, there is a show called How Is It Made?
I see that.
How Is It Made is a great show. In fact, there's one sitting at my TiVo right now that's all about coffins. Coffins and pool cues. And it's every episode, they'll just take the weirdest, most disparate thing. Well, what are you showing? Well, we're showing how they make, you know, badminton rackets and, you know, howitzers. Two wildly disparate things, and they'll show the manufacturing process of them. But that is also one of those shows I'm always either a few minutes late or a few minutes early for it. And so I'll have to watch, like, whatever is on before it. And I swear to God, the other day, it was a whole thing about the manufacturing of Jelly Belly jelly beans. And I just sat there like a moron and watched the last 9 minutes of it or whatever. But the thing about all of these reality shows is the winner of the first season always gets a lot of fame. And then it is, progressively more diminished with its season. So that's why everybody knows who Richard Hatch is. Except for the soccer-playing guy, Ethan, I couldn't name another winner from Survivor.
No.
I could name Richard Hatch and Ethan because he was a soccer player, and that's it. And I can't name another person that won on that show, just like it is with The Real World. I don't even know if The Real World is still on MTV. I have no idea if The Real World even if they're even making new episodes of that. I remember when I know I sound old here, but I remember when each new season of The Real World on MTV was greeted with, and it was all of this speculation. There was all kinds of buzz about it. It was like, what city are they going to film in? And, you know, who are the candidates going to be for it? Did they ever do a Real World Portland? I don't think they did.
Not to my knowledge.
No, they tried to, and everyone boycotted it.
Good for them. All right. Well, in any event.
It would have failed miserably.
It would have. No, it would have sucked. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
All hail the beautiful Sarah.
Thank you.
Rick, I was a small market, in fact, minuscule market country DJ back in the late 80s, early 90s, and the best yet greatest yet worst song title, I believe, I'm 99% sure it was Conway and Loretta, yeah. You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly.
Are you kidding me, really?
Yeah, it was, because back in the day, we played, you know, to coin Blues Brothers, two kinds of music, country and western.
Yes.
And that, you know, the Furlin Husky, the Kitty Wells, the dreck of country. But that was an old one. I'm 99% sure it was Conway and Loretta.
Conway. And that was another thing that country did, and sort of the hip-hop world has picked up on this. They will find a duet that works, and they'll just
beat it.
They'll pound that partnership into the ground. Into the ground. All right. Thank you, sir.
Enjoy your day.
Yeah, that's the sort of Jay-Z, Beyonce thing. They'll find some sort of a hookup that works musically, and then they will just exploit it until you are sick to the teeth of it. Of course, Loretta Lynn and Conway Twitty also did a really, really, and I love Loretta Lynn. I really do. She's done some really fantastic songs. But man, she did that. Conway Twitty, I don't think he ever sang anything that was good. I don't think he ever did a great song. And when he was with other people, they would begin to suck. Because he did that Louisiana Woman, Mississippi Man. That was them, right? Mm-hmm. Conway and Loretta? Yeah. God, what a terrible song that is. This song makes me want to set my ears on fire.
Well, it's like they're a national anthem down there.
Rick, I agree that Islands in a Stream is an extremely hideous song, but what makes it worse is that it was written by Maurice Gibb of the Bee Gees. That is true. Yeah. The reason Kenny Rogers got it was because the Bee Gees had too much material for the next album they were making, so they gave it to him. The Bee Gees were sort of the prince of the 1970s and early 80s, where they were so prolific that they would just give out their songs on the street corner to anybody who wanted them. He says, I always retch when I hear Islands in a Stream. It's so bad it makes me sterile. Here's the Reverend Tim Riley.
Well, ABC trumpeted its new fall lineup, and they're going to give the Geico Caveman his own television show. It's a doctor from the Geico commercials. As an offbeat commentary on ethnic prejudice from the perspective of three prehistoric guys trying to make their way in the modern world.
I think we've officially...
I'm stupid, but I think the Geico commercials are really funny.
The Geico commercials, the ones I've seen, are pretty amazing.
I like the tiny house. That was the only one I liked.
Well... The advance word on this Geico sitcom is that it is among the lowest testing, worst things that's ever been produced. So I might actually watch it for that. And maybe they're doing a little bit of reverse hype. Maybe they're trying to get me to watch it by advertising how bad it is. Speaking of which, of how bad, whatever happened to that supposed conservative version of the Daily Show?
Oh, I don't hear anything about that.
Remember, Rupert Murdoch picked that thing up for 22 episodes. Never heard from that again.
No.
The advance word I was reading on Ain't It Cool News, which is sort of the home base for all this stuff, Ain't It Cool said that it is gut-churningly awful. They said it is so bad that it almost defies categorization, that it's like...
The Geico sitcom?
Yeah. They said that it's... Well, see, because that's why. That's why it's on. Because no one's calling it the caveman thing, they're calling it the Geico sitcom. Every time you say that, you know, there's some fat white guy at Geico sitting in a boardroom rubbing his hands together. Totally, that's why, because they're calling it the Geico sitcom. This is weird, man. We are kind of living in Paddy Chayefsky's universe, because, you know, the next thing it's going to be, you know, the next thing it's going to be the Dr. Scholl's sitcom, you know, it's, you know, starring the Korns family. And that's going to be it. That'll be the entire next, that's how they're going to combat TiVo. There's all this discussion about what are they going to do because people are skipping the television commercials. You know, are they going to have banner ads? Are they going to have little crawls at the bottom that show the ads? Are they going to have product placement? This is like right out there, you know, in front. Nobody bats an eye because it's just so obvious. But the word is that it's unbelievably bad, which kind of makes me happy in a way. I mean, I'll watch that. But it is, when you read that story, it doesn't even seem real, right? Yeah. It just seems surreal.
You know, back in the early days of TV, when they just had one sponsor per show, and if you go back and watch the old Burns and Allen show, it was sponsored by Carnation Milk, and they put this milk in every storyline like five or six times within the script. They're pouring Carnation Milk, and they're talking about cows or how great Carnation Milk is.
Yeah, and it would be, you know, and it would be like Jack Benny was the same way.
Oh, the Jell-O program.
Jell-O, I was just going to... Jell-O presents the Jack Benny program! And then they would weave it into every storyline. And it would be, you know, Rochester, fetch me some Jell-O, you know, or whatever the hell. Oh, all right. Rick, Conway Twitty made a classic rock version of the Irish song, Oh, Danny Boy. It's just as good as you'd imagine. Great. I have to find that now. Hey, somebody sent us an email. Jerry Falwell's dead, Tim.
We heard that earlier.
Yes. Thank you, sir. All right. What am I doing here? Geico. I mean, they're a fine company.
Chat, don't laugh. Client alert.
She's laughing because the sitcom is rib tickling.
I know.
There'll be a sitcom of the State Farm man not showing up to repair the damage from Hurricane Katrina. Somebody living in the rubble waiting for the State Farm.
Somebody living in a box underneath an overpass. About the wacky hijinks of an insurance company that refused to pay for your hurricane damage.
How about the woman from Head On? Will she get her own variety on?
But don't laugh, dude. Don't you laugh. That'll be next.
I'm waiting for that one.
That'll be next. It'll be, because she's a weird kind of celebrity. Well, you know that if it was applied. Wait, hold on. I'm writing down something. Rick Emerson show. Reply. Okay. A little idea for a liner. Write that down. You know, this was 2007, but you know if this ad was happening now, you know they would give the Where's the Beef lady a sitcom, Clara Peller. Because, I mean, as it was, Clara Peller, Sarah doesn't remember that. You've probably seen it on, like, maybe a VH1 wrap-up or something. Remember Where's the Beef?
I don't remember it happening, but I've
heard
the reference. Yeah.
Okay. You know, because as it was, the Where's the Beef lady, I remember that they sold a Where's the Beef candy bar. They sold a Where's the Beef bubble gum. I'm pretty sure, I mean, look, if she had lived like another month, they would have done one of those wacky Where's the Beef rapping songs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that would have happened.
Dancing in front of a green screen. There's a kaleidoscope in the background.
And it would have been a whole lot of, you know, dun, 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 Where's the Beef? Dun, 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 dun. Where's the Beef? You know that would be the case. They ought to do that now. I mean, I remember just a couple years later, I forget who it was. I want to say it was X-Clan, but it probably wasn't. There was some rap group later that sampled that woman saying, I've fallen and I can't get up. And they sampled it and it like ended up in the hook of their song. So, yeah, Clara Peller would totally have that. The apply directly to forehead. Here's another celebrity. I degenerated the whole thing about weird, quirky celebrities from television commercials. Do you remember that Snapple lady?
Oh, yeah.
She was huge. The secretary, the lady from Snapple that answered, like, the customer email or whatever. So if this Geico thing, if this sitcom takes off, you will absolutely see that the next fall season will be 20 of these shows. All right, people calling about this Conway Twitty song for some goddamn reason. Hello, sir.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Got a country and western song for you, Rick. Have you ever heard Country Cliche by Neil Gladstone?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's a song about a guy whose wife runs off to Honolulu with a guru she found in a magazine ad. And it goes on about that. He needs a lot of money, so he writes a country cliche. And it'll really set your mind right for country and western.
What's the guy's name?
Neil Gladstone.
Neil Gladstone. I'll keep an eye out for it, sir.
I think it's on an album called Sleep Neat.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, there you go. You know, there's a show called Meet the Press. Is there a show called Press the Meat? All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. More from the Reverend Tim Riley ahead. Phone calls, inexplicably so. Dennis, what are you playing?
I don't know, I just picked some random country.
What
songs.
Is this?
Redneck and Love Making Night.
Oh, this is by, is this Conway Twitty?
Uh-huh.
A Redneck and Love Making Night. Kill me. Freaking kill me. Oh, now I have to listen to it for a minute. I keep forgetting we have the couple gold library in there.
Oh, I don't.
Hello, baby.
Oh, God.
Conway here. Let me lay this in your ear. Get ready to go. But we're going to roll about sundown. Come on, Jim. I got the boogie-woogie music in the old ain't track.
Oh, yeah. No.
I got the top laid back. We'll go cruising and we'll go fooling around. Well, here I am, baby. You ready to play? Slide it on.
I'm sorry?
We gotta get it. We ain't got a minute to wait.
What is she sliding in?
In the car.
Oh.
But you sure look nice. Makes me wanna hug you. I'm kissing all over your face.
I'll get
you.
Special hug.
Well, it's a redneck and love making night.
This is among the worst things ever recorded. I forgot about this song.
But still, you've been touching the moonlight.
You touched me in the moonlight.
And you're old.
Well, okay.
It's redneck and love.
I'm going to step on this beautiful hook. All right, back after this, the Rick Emerson Show.
Make Scotty J put his belly away.
You know he sucks in.
You know, it's disturbing how much thought you've given this.
It's not thought. Guys suck
and
in their
guts. And how you're pointing out all of his body parts that you can see through his shirt.
You can see his nipples. What do you want from me? All right. Rick, this email says, granted, I'm mowing my lawn right now, as all of us suburbanites are legally mandated to do when it's sunny. So maybe the lawnmower was affecting my hearing. But I can swear that the first verse of that Conway Twitty song includes a line in which Mr. Twitty wants to, quote, stick something in my ear, and that he has chocolate thighs. Maybe the chocolate thighs thing is just my liberal guilt, though. Like that time I mentioned that the one white reggae guy in Rockstar Supernova was saying, "Let me hear all my black people," when he sang the Sublime song. Sign there's something wrong with me. I remember that.
I never
figure out what the hell he was saying.
I think that was what he said.
I still think he was saying, "Hear all my black people." Do you have the Conway Twitty song?
Let's see if
Mr. Twitty wants to put something in your ear and if he has chocolate thighs. Many ways to tell right away it's a bad song. I'm still here, by the way. Don't be afraid. Oh, God.
It's like never ending.
It's like if you soaked Leonard Skinner in a big thing of bleach for like a decade.
Hello, baby. Conway here. Let me lay this in your ear. Get ready to go. And we're gonna roll about sundown. I got some boogie woogie music in the old track. Yeah. I got the top laid back.
No, top laid back, sir. Not chocolate thighs.
Well, yeah,
baby. You ready to play? Slide it on in. We'll slip away. We gotta get it. We ain't got a minute to waste.
No, I got high.
I got a six pack along next to drunk on ice. Ooh, but you sure look nice. Yeah. I'm gonna hug it and kiss it all over your face.
That's a creepy phrase. I'm gonna
kiss you all over your face. Where'd you get all that hair? I kiss you all over your face.
I'm not gonna miss a single inch.
Hold still, Daddy needs to kiss you all over your face.
When you can feel close and you hold.
It's creepy. That's one of those things that, like, your weird aunt would say.
I can just kiss you all over your face. There are, like, 700 Conway Twitty songs in
here. Yeah. I got a whole bunch of, well, let's see, Rick. How about "She's Acting Single, I'm Drinking Doubles"? Yeah. All right, 503-733-2970. Rick, how about, it's all Conway Twitty. How about the Conway song, "Love to Lay You Down"? I work with a woman who sings that song all day along with Elvira. Just thinking about it makes me want to poke sharp objects into my brain. Lisa, do you have "Love to Lay You Down" by Conway Twitty?
Oh, you know, I can't find that one. I do have...
That's too bad. Oh, God.
I remember somebody saying that he was in a band when he was younger.
Yeah.
And having to maybe sing this song.
This is beyond bad. This is actually so bad that it actually can't... It's like when you get your hand in really hot water and it's so hot that for a minute you don't even feel it. It just doesn't even register.
No,
that's how bad this
is. You haven't told the Elvira story in this rendition of the show.
It's not really important that we do that.
Weren't you in a family band?
Yes, I was. Before I tell that story, let me say this. You know, Andrew, who's the drummer for Emerson Starship, Andrew was in a country band as a young man, much like I was. Andrew was in a country band when he was a kid. He had to play "Swingin'" by John Anderson. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from miles around, local automotive excitement and discussion. Saturday's 9 to 11, Dennis Pittenbarger. Hi, how you doing?
Not too bad.
We got to wait for the hooker.
What was the other song that you wanted?
Hold on. Now that we're here, we have to hear the hook.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the worst hook in all of country music. I think they won a Grammy for this record. All right, let's stop that.
Did you sing at the part when you were in the band?
No, I did not.
You know, taking away the incest, the rampant alcoholism, and the wife beating, a lot of this kind of music actually instilled some somewhat decent...
What are you talking about?
Just let me finish.
I was talking about Rick's family.
Oh.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much.
Sorry.
When you take away the incest and the beatings...
Oh, I didn't realize we were talking about Rick's family there for a second. Sorry. Did I touch a nerve?
Awkward.
Awkward. What are you talking about?
I was talking about the music in general.
Everybody's just shifting uncomfortably in their seats now.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking along the line that the country music did give us this, you know, the ridiculous hooks like Elvira or Swinging.
I was
to a certain degree, they also, you know, it kind of comes along with a certain personification of Americana that makes it.
No, there's
good.
A lot of good country music. There really is a lot of good country music. It's just none of it is likely to be in that folder. That's the thing. That's
well,
all I'm saying.
They're just good at coming up with those kind of hooks. There's a country song out there right now that is, it's not, it's, what is it? I'm not as good as I once was, but yeah, I'm as good once as I ever was.
Yeah, Toby Keith. Yeah, the thing about country music, and I've made this point a lot, is, and I'll tell the Elvira story in just a second. What country music does better than any other form of popular music is they are good at plays on words, wordplay.
Yeah.
There is more skillful and witty and clever lyric writing, and I know that like every Elvis Costello fan is vomiting right now as I say this, but it's true. And I'm not even really a fan of most pop country, but there is more skillful wordplay in country music than in any other a form of popular modern music.
I would agree with you. The thing is, too, about country music is they actually... The thing to me about good songs is if it tells a story. Anybody can come up with a hook and say it over a drum track that they made up in their downstairs. But it's like The Low. I think, you know, The Lowe's rap, I think, is good because he tells stories within the songs that he makes.
Well, that's why hip-hop is so great. And people don't really see this, but hip-hop, there really is a pretty direct line to me from country music, classic country, to hip-hop. One is really sort of a mirror image of the other.
Yeah.
They really are very similar in a lot of ways. But, you know, it's like the example I always give is that Garth Brooks song. And, you know, and I've sort of come full circle on Garth Brooks. When I first heard The Dance, which is the first, I don't think it was his first single, because I think his first single was Much Too Young to Feel This Old. And that's another one right there. Much Too Young to Feel This Damn Old. Another great little piece of work.
Perfect hook.
But then he put up The Dance, which is just a beautiful song. I mean, The Dance is a really, really great song. And I got burned out on it. And then there was, like, Garth Mania, and I really just actively rebelled against it. But you know what? You go back and listen to Garth Brooks now, and those songs are so great, and they are just head and shoulders above most other pop music, and especially above most other country music. There's a great song by Garth Brooks called That Summer. And it's the character of the song is like some, you get the feeling he's either late teens, early 20s, but he's sort of a young man. And he's a young man, and he has this summer an affair with a much older woman. I think she's like a widow in the song. But he's like working, it's, you know, to say the old thing, he's like working on her farm or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, 19, and she's like 50. And they have some torrid affair over the course of a summer. Man, it's a great song. It really is just a beautiful song. Really well done. That guy really co-wrote and or acquired just some really fantastic pieces of music. But 90% of country, like 90% of everything, though, is just crap. It's just awful.
Well, it's like one hook, and even if it's good or not, it's repetitive. It's just, the song doesn't go anywhere. I mean, that's great if you're in like a dance club, but it doesn't, you know, it needs a means to the end.
That's the thing with that Elvira song, is it's so terrible. It's so awful that when people heard it, they immediately just latched onto it. You'll never forget that. No matter that thing about that Elvira song, no matter how bad it is, everybody knows it. Everybody who's heard it once, Sarah will be 80 years old and she'll know the hook to Elvira. When I was about, so the story is real briefly, when I was like, God, I must have been like 11 or 12, that was kind of the heyday of my parents, because they were hicks. My parents had this country band. And this is before country became cool again. And so I was like 11 or 12 years old, and my parents, and I didn't realize until years later that this was in its own way kind of cool. At the time, it didn't seem cool at all. And I was like 11 or 12 years old, and my parents had a country band, and they would just drag us all over the goddamn state playing literally in like barns. I mean, where are we going? We're going to, and the town I always cite is Washtenaw. We're going to a town with no stoplights. We're going to play in a barn in Washtenaw. Get in the camper. And it's like they're at 12 years old, just old enough that you kind of want to be cool in front of girls. You sort of want to be, you know, you don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want your parents, and you just old enough that your parents are mortifying. Everything they do is cringe-inducing. And here I am, and again, this is pre-Garth. This is when country music, you said that to people, and they laughed, especially teenagers or young people, children. Now, you say country to most young people, and even if they don't like it, you know, it's not ridiculous. There was a time, though, when country music was the least cool thing on earth. Johnny Cash hadn't become a deity the way he is now. Garth Brooks hadn't happened.
Crystal Gayle was on top of the charts.
That's what I mean. It was like the Charlie Pride era, yeah, when the country was just embarrassing. And so it's like my friends would be like, so what do you want to hang out this weekend? What are you doing? Or whatever you'd say when you're told, do you want to get together and play football or whatever it is they would ask? And I would have to say, no, I'm not going to be around. Where are you going?
nowhere. You know, because I didn't want to say that I'm, and then immediately cut to me in a barn in Washtenaw, badly strumming a guitar and having to sing the chorus to Elvira, flanked by my idiot family. That's a lot of fun.
You can't
fringe in there. No, and you can't.
I used to play that hook to punish you. I remember on the other station.
And you can't. You can't tell girls about that and impress them. Not in 1985.
No.
What do you do this weekend? I play guitar in a country band and we sing Elvira by the Oak Ridge. Do you want to come see us gig sometime? Hello? You know, there's just nothing.
And I need to wash my hair.
Playing in just a terrible, terrible bars and, like, Eagles Lodges and Knights of Columbus Halls.
But somewhere inside your psyche, you knew it was cool.
No.
To at least be part of it?
No, there was nothing. When you are 12, you have no perspective on these things.
No, I'm talking now.
Now I look back, and I will say that it was cool that my parents were musicians. It was cool that... You know, as much as I kind of make fun of my family, it was cool that they, you know, that they sort of put a band together and they actually went out. And even though they were just playing in these stupid little venues, I mean, it was a cool thing. You know, it's better than, you know, parents who just go home and just sit on their fat asses and, you know, and drink hams in front of the television. I mean, you know, they were kind of doing something, which is cool. At the time, though, there was nothing cool. It was just embarrassing. It was just horrifying to me.
Now, did you guys have, like, I mean, I'm not talking about,
like, my mom,
family.
God damn, my mom, who I love, my mom is a saint, she really is, but I mean, god damn, my family's just so trashy. My mom standing up there in a Rainier beer tank top, you know, with an electric bass around her neck, singing harmony on Elvira. I mean, you just want to die. I mean, I want to die now thinking about it, because I'm projecting myself back to being 12. You know?
That answers the question about the uniforms. There was no unity in what you were
wearing. No, the uniform was like my dad in, like, those weird flat-ass Sears Roebuck pants they would sell. Again, my mom and the aforementioned no bra, because why would you do that? You know, Rainier beer tank top, no bra, and then, like, some, you know, my mom's equivalent of the Sears Roebuck pants. You know, and then me dressed like a little mongoloid, you know, because that's how I dressed. Bad teeth, terrible, freakish looking.
Were we in the long hair era of Rick Emerson?
No, pre-mullet, just bad bowl cut.
Oh,
I just had
nice.
The mo. I had the mo. You know, it was so awful. It was terrible. I mean, it really was. And then, of course, you know, because you're 12, the reason parents have children is because they can't, is because slavery is illegal, and so you have children instead. So my parents, you know, at the end, there's me trying to put a PV column speaker into the back of a camper. It weighs like 1,000 pounds. I'm 12.
Aww.
My spindly little legs are breaking, you know, as I'm trying to put it in the back. And then, of course, here's the worst thing. My brother, James, was a pretty talented drummer, and he gave it up. So, I mean, I'm not going to say he was like a prodigy or anything, but he was really good, especially for a little kid. He was a pretty great drummer, and he gave it up at a certain point. But I kind of knew how to play guitar, and my brother was a pretty decent drummer. And the worst thing that ever happened was that my parents discovered both of those facts. And so then, guess who became the opening act?
Oh.
The opening act became me and my brother. And, of course, we didn't know how to play anything, so it's just my brother and I playing Wipeout for 30 minutes, basically, you know, in front of a nursing home crowd.
What was the name of this band?
They were called Clearwater, I think, after a street encounter.
Opening for Clearwater, the Emerson Boys?
Yeah, so it's just me and my, you know, me and my idiot brother sitting there. And now, Wipeout, you know?
For 45 minutes.
And then it was just hell. And then so we would, and I don't have anything against old people. I look forward to being an old person so I can be cranky. But I got to tell you, man, like 80% of the gigs my parents would play with this band that I had to be part of were in nursing homes. And it's just a smell of like Bengay and stool. You're sitting, you're on stage, you're playing in the dining hall of a nursing home. It just smells like succotash.
Excuse me, I think there's a dead person in row two.
Seriously, you're playing some Hank Williams, you're playing some Ferlin Husky song, and an old guy who forgets where he is just starts to wet himself and then just wanders towards the stage. You know, a lot of guys with plates in their heads going, can you play Peg in My Heart? You know, just looking down, wishing that God would kill us all.
I know that you often say that you will never have children, but for just that reason, isn't that a reason for you to have two children that you can mold into what might be super, you know, sort of pop culture opposites of all the things that have gone wrong?
No.
Okay, I'm just suggesting.
No. All right, what am I... Just to get a couple of these here, and we got a break. We got to come back. We'll talk. You got a special guest this weekend.
Yes.
We have news from Tim under the top five. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Rick, am I there with you?
Rick?
Yes.
Hey, boss. You're cracking me up about you playing in this band when you were a youth.
Yeah, clearly a lot of fun.
Yeah, but I would say, in retrospect, when you get a little older, you can always look back on your musical experiences with a little pride. I mean, you were shredding to some degree.
No, it was. I mean, I see now that it was kind of cool. Again, not that the band was all that great. I want to say this in defense of my mom, especially. Not that the band was all that great. They weren't doing anything groundbreaking. But, you know, again, most people just sit on their fat asses and do nothing. My parents, God bless them, got a band and went out and played music for people. And you know what? It's not easy to get up on a stage, no matter what crowd it is, to get up on a stage and to play music in front of people who don't know you. I admire anybody who has the guts to get up in front of a crowd and perform. It's not an easy thing to do. But when you're a 12-year-old boy in 1985, it is the most embarrassing thing on earth.
It is. I'm not going to waste too much of your time, Rick. I'm having a good time with you today. Thanks a lot. I just wanted to say all those Conway Twitty songs sounded like instrumentals to my first Casio. That I got, you know, for $20 down the street from my neighbor.
Like you're on demo mode, with a twang. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks a lot, buddy. Have a good one.
Thank you, sir. Oh, by the way, Scotty J has armed me with
I'm fallen, and I can't get up.
Don't ask why he had that sitting around.
Oh, boy.
Hi, Brian, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, what's happening?
What's up?
Well, I got one of the best, worst country songs ever. It's come out fairly recently. It's I Want to Check You for Ticks. And I think it's by Brad Paisley.
I want to check you for ticks?
I want to check you for ticks, yeah.
I want to examine your prostate.
Yeah, well, and it, you know, it talks about how he wants to see the other half of her butterfly tattoo and the small of her back, et cetera, et cetera.
I want to check you for ticks?
Yeah, go to iTunes. Look it up, dude. It's right there. It's great. It's just beautiful.
For ticks, you're saying?
Yeah, you know, like kind of like spiders, but they suck into you.
I want to inspect your blood for guinea worms. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Oh, and he's also given us the...
Where's the beef?
Thank you. Why do you have that sitting around, Scotty?
Of course he does.
That's true. All right. What time is it? Where does the time go? Hey, do you want to talk about your guest? You got a guest this week before we forget, because I always forget to do the adequate plugging.
Through your top five.
What's coming up on Miles Around the Automotive Show this weekend?
Actually, we have kind of the holy grail, kind of the Alice Cooper of guests in the automotive world. And the funny thing is, I said his name and you looked at me as if I had just thrown a stone right at your forehead. Chip Foose, who is a very well-known auto builder, auto customizer. He has a line of wheels. He's got his own show called Overhauling, where they'll like come and steal like your Ford Focus and turn it into the coolest Ford Focus ever made. And it's kind of like a lot of the other shows out there, but he actually does the work. And Chip Foose is really well known in the automotive community. It should be a really great interview. The guy is like the holy grail. It is truly the Alice Cooper of my world. So
I hope it goes better than my Alice Cooper interview.
Well, you know, by Murphy's Law, he'll probably not call. But, you know, you never know. But it should be a fun show. We've got a bunch of stuff we're going to do this weekend as well.
Let's do one more here, then we'll break. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello, Rick. Wonderful show.
Thank you.
Is there any Clearwater photos and or Super 8?
No, not that you're going to see, my friend. No, to be fair, I don't think there might be, actually. I mean, you know, I've never been shy about showing embarrassing photographs of me, but I don't know that there are any photographs of me with the band. There might be.
It's okay. I'll have the theater of the mind.
All right. Thank you,
buddy.
All right.
Super 8 of you and that would be incredible.
Yeah. Now, we didn't take any home movies. We were not. There are no home movies in our family. We didn't have a camera or anything. So there's photographs. No home movies. Let's break now, shall we? Going to play something hideous into the break? I don't know. Is this Islands in a Stream? You're a very bad person. Baby, when I met you, there was this is awful. I'm so bad. And I love Dolly Parton. I really do. She's an amazingly gifted songwriter.
Here, I can do Kenny, but it's only visual. I have to grab the sides of my face and pull back really hard.
You give yourself an unnaturally weird slant to your eyes. They all point. Like, one eye points up now, and the other one kind of, like, points off in a different direction. And they all, yeah.
Even Mickey Rourke, man, it's gone bad. We got something going.
Your heart's a beating, I'll be here wondering. Get what it's
503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. That's next Tuesday, My Chemical Romance at Memorial Coliseum. Are they playing this album all the way through? Do you know what the set list is?
I do not.
Because I really don't, I don't even really know much of their other stuff. I just know this one record.
I don't either. All I know is that you and I are going to be in a sea of 12-year-olds.
It's R. Kelly's dream come true. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, your revelator. He is the very Reverend Jim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Jim Riley.
Her husband ended their marriage, landed in jail after she fired 19 shots at some of his belongings. She dumped him in the street. Apparently, the residents of Talon were very upset when they heard shooting, and they saw a woman shooting in a backpack, another item she threw from her vehicle. She drove away before the police arrived, but they quickly tracked her down. They say a 32-year-old Robert Miner told police she was upset about her husband's decision to end their relationship, so she tossed his bag of stuff out in the street and shot it with a .22-caliber handgun. Yes, America's mourning the death of the Reverend Jesse Jackson. He was found dead in his office. Nothing could be done. He was 73.
He was a man of God, by the way.
He was a man of God.
As exemplified by this quote where he says of the Brown versus the Board of Education statement, which integrated public schools, if Chief Justice Warren and his associates had known God's word, I am quite confident they would never have made this decision. The facilities should be separate. When God has drawn a line of distinction, we should not attempt to cross that line. There go the pro-segregationist views of Jerry Falwell, man of God.
The healing process begins as America gets back to business, concentrating on America's next top model. Where 20-year-old Neon talks about the joys of modeling and dressing up in different clothes.
Getting dressed up and seeing how sexy you look in clothes that you really don't like, you know, something that you really wouldn't wear, and, you know, just dressing it up and looking good. That's probably like the most thing that I like about modeling.
Jesus God. Really? At a certain point, that
I'm starting to feel good about America again.
About halfway through, only my dog could hear that. Let me just say this.
Getting dressed up and seeing how sexy you look in clothes that you really don't like, you know.
Okay. It's 503-733-2970. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming by and listening to the weird, fruity sounds of wherever that model was. Okay, I have a great idea. I have a fantastic idea. Who wants to hear it?
Oh, me.
It's a transvestite beauty show. It's like America's Next Top Model, blah, 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 but it's all transvestites. What do you think?
That'd be terrific.
Come on!
Yeah.
America would be afraid.
No, it's...
I'd watch it.
You put it on FX, though, or Bravo or something.
A razor company would sponsor it.
I would totally watch that.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be great. It'd be like America's Next Top Model or Makeover or Last Model Standing or whatever the hell they do. Tim, did you say Jesse Jackson is dead?
Yeah, I was wondering about that, too. I believe that you had maybe...
Did I? Well, I didn't mean it. He's not dead.
Quit calling. Jesse Jackson, to the best of our knowledge, is still alive.
Right. It's Jerry Falwell.
All right. Jerry Falwell is dead. Jesse Jackson, we think, alive. Hang up now.
Stop it.
I didn't hear that. Quit calling. Quit correct. And we're not going to correct that mistake again. So that's the one time.
I only make one mistake per day.
No, and we usually don't even point them out. Here's Tim Riley.
Reports of a suspicious man wearing a trench coat and trying to conceal a long cylindrical object prompted the lockdown and evacuation of Lynn Benton Community College. Your future begins here. That's the campus in Albany. The man, a 27-year-old Lynn Benton Community College student, was later located in his yoga class. The man did not have a weapon and was released after investigators interviewed him and searched his vehicle. No cylindrical object was found under his coat. It began Friday when a student called police to report the man. The campus was in lockdown as police searched the area, evacuating students from buildings until it was deemed safe. The reaction was prompted because of the tandem of the man. What does that mean? Wearing a trench coat and reports of him trying to hide something.
What it basically means is that now apparently your clothing is enough to get the man to come and shake you down, even though the guy obviously didn't have anything. Mm. So
he was probably dressed as one of those goths.
Probably. All right.
Well, that's it for today.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley returns in a little over an hour. 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 and 7. Greatest newsman on earth, ladies and gentlemen. He returns at the top
Jesse
of the hour.
Jesse Jackson is alive.
All the way through.
I don't know how that happened.
I just want to take it out in post. All the way through the transvestite pageant. See, it's a great idea. I would do that right now if I had a television network.
Well, what are the challenges?
Well, I don't know. I don't watch America's Next Top Model. You just rip off whatever the show you have, but it's just transvestites. It's just dudes dressed as women. That's a great idea. Even better. You do a crying game type reality show where it's a beauty pageant. One of them is a transsexual. Okay, even better. No, even better than that. You do
way too much coffee.
You do a reality dating game. You do a reality dating game where it's a guy trying to hook up with some hot babe. One of the hot babes, a transsexual, used to have a penis.
They have a show on MTV where you get to go on a date with, like, three people and one of them's gay.
Really? Oh, I've seen that.
Gay, straight, or...
Gay, straight, or married.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've seen that. But this is different. It would be like...
totally different.
No, it's like ten hot women, but one of them is either a cross-dresser or, easier to pull off, probably transsexual, because they do more physical augmentation. I mean, how weird is that? And then, if the guy ends up picking... Or you make it like five women, so the odds are like 20%. If the guy ends up picking the hot girl, and then he finds... And then the twist is at the end. Okay, she's hot, but she used to be a man.
Oh, yeah, and then all of a sudden...
And then there's a whole lot of, like...
Murder.
No.
What was the show? What was that talk show where the guy ended up...
No, my television program will take no responsibility for any of that. There will be disclaimers signed by everybody.
Oh, yeah.
There will be no murder. Murder?
I barely knew her.
But it's like three or four women, one of them used to be a man. And then do you let the guy consummate the deal and then tell him afterward? Of course you do.
Murder.
You'd totally watch that. If there was a reality show that had a guy picking and then sleeping with a woman who used to be a man. You telling me you wouldn't watch that? You would absolutely watch. That's like a 40 share.
That's a train wreck.
Why am I here in this job? I ought to be in it doing development deals right now. I had the Bionic Man idea yesterday. Today, this guy goes out, sleeps with a transsexual, and then you tell him on television.
Train wreck television, man. People watch
it. What do you call it? Something. Transsexual, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what it is. Oops, you slept with a guy. Something. It's a great idea. Dude looks like a lady. Thank you. That's Brad called in about that. Thank you, sir. Dude looks like a lady.
That's a good name.
And then, yeah, it's like Joe Millionaire, where he doesn't know, because the deal is only in post-production do they explain the shtick. They just, you know, when you're participating, filming one of those reality shows, you don't know what the deal is.
Well, you only
know what they tell you.
Are you like, you know, the thing where all the people that would be the, you know, four girls and one whatever, stick their legs through a hole and he, like, feels the leg and what's the real woman's leg? I don't know. I guess I'm looking for more.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
What
are you
doing?
No, I'm saying, like, if, you know, if
he sticks it through the hole and then they feel it. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about, I can grasp your idea, Rick. I guess what I'm looking for is...
Really?
I'm looking for...
Grasp my chocolate thighs as well?
Pardon me. I'm looking for more of you to explain how the show's going to work.
Okay. Listen to me now. Like on Joe Millionaire.
Okay.
Remember that?
I remember.
We watched Joe Millionaire, we knew, you know, or like, you know, Average Joe was another one, where we, the audience, because we were watching the finished show, we knew the twist going in. But when they were filming that show, they didn't know. They just placed an ad. Hey, wanted attention horse to be in some TV show. Bunch of attention horse show up. They sign a release. They only know what the producers tell them. Hey, you know, hey, you're dating this guy. He's a millionaire. Whatever. Blah, 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 blah. They don't know the twist. They only know what the producers tell them. And once they sign the release form, the producers can just lie all they want, right? So you get some guy. Hey, we're going to hook you up with some hot babe. You got to go on a reality show, but at the end, you'll get to pick from one of, like, four hot babes. Whatever. You get some guy. And then you set it up. He goes through a bunch of hoops. He takes them out to dinner. He has to meet their parents. He has to do whatever. And at the end, he picks the hot babe. It's kind of like the dating game. Except the hook that he does not know during filming, but that you tell the audience when you air the show, is one of the girls used to be a guy.
But I'm just saying, I used to see that ending up
where
they used to be guys, even.
Rebecca Schaefer.
Jenny Jones, and the guy's name was
Eric Schaefer, I think. His neighbor came on and said he had a crush on him, and he killed him because he was a pinhead redneck. Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. All right, let's get a couple of these. Then we don't have time for the top five, sadly. Mm. Mark, hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, that show you guys are talking about was called Gay, Straight, or Married.
Yeah, yeah.
My brother-in-law was actually on it.
On it, really?
Which one was he?
He was the married guy. He's a big 6'6" kind of tall white guy, and they don't tell the girl that she's got to choose at the end of the show between these three guys. They just tell her she's going on a date with three guys.
See, that's what I mean. You don't tell them the gimmick ahead of time. You just say, look, we're going to point a camera at you, and everybody will look at you, and you'll be the center of attention. Go on a date. And
yeah,
they say,
the greatest thing, because she chose the gay guy.
That's so great.
And the two gay guys got to go on the green vacation, and she got to walk off and sulk. It was the best thing ever.
See? Imagine you just get some tight-ass guy on there, and then you just say, by the way, the woman you've chosen, used to be a man. And then you just do the tight close-up on the face. Come on, it's great. Would you watch that, sir?
I think I would.
All right, thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
And so, all right, there you go. All right, fantastic.
The supporting star of the transsexual holding his penis in a jar.
See, why do you say things like that?
I don't know. I just...
You trying to angle for that soon-to-be-open slot on XM? Is that the deal? Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
What's up?
Hey, buddy, sorry, your idea is already taken. It's on the BBC, and it's a show exactly quote verbatim what you're describing.
You're kidding me.
No, it's already on the BBC, but the catch is...
Come on!
Nope, the catch is not the da-da-da at the end. It is, but the double catch is when the guy picks the girl, they're supposed to spend a weekend together on an island by themselves. Now, that he's found out that she used to be a man, they will also throw in there like $100,000 to up his choice. And 90% of the time, the guy chooses the guy girl, whatever you are, the transsexual.
So he basically gets $100,000 if he picks the transsexual.
Yeah, well, no, when he picks her, he gets the $100,000 if he goes on the 2-day island getaway with
and
her.
And you know, some guy left alone with a transsexual long enough, we'll have sex with her. He'll get horny enough some night, and he'll be drunk enough that he'll totally have sex with her.
I don't know about a weekend, maybe a couple years, but, you know.
Most of the guys I know, 3 a.m., Friday night, enough Killian's red put down, they'll do it. All right, thank you, sir.
This is great.
All right. Do we have about 90 seconds to spare?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to play this. They'll take us out with this.
Sorry, your idea got taken.
Let's stare at Sarah while she makes a phone call.
Okay.
All right, let me tell you why.
Okay.
Sorry, when people call and they know I'm on the show, I always think it's important, like something's bad. Okay. I'm ready.
All right. I'm just going to play this. This is just because we got Lycus coming up at 3. I hope, Scotty, if this isn't the entire call, is it? I want to get the... okay, it is. All right, this is last, just because you don't hear a lot of these calls from Portland. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play this. We'll see. This is a Lycus, I think, from last Friday.
Let's say hello to Chad. Chad is in Portland, Oregon, home of the other white.
I think this is a flashing on Powell call.
Hello. Oh, pretty good there, Chad. What up?
Dude, I've been listening 7 years, have my lights on every Friday, and I just got blitzed.
Yeah!
Yeah! And it's about goddamn time, ladies.
Tell us what you saw, Chad.
Oh, my God, a beautiful set of solid D's, at least maybe even a D on a beautiful brunette just leaning out behind the driver's seat, man. Oh!
Fantastic. And where did you see this?
I was driving eastbound on Powell Boulevard down in lovely southeast Portland.
Yeah.
Just driving along. We got a break in the rain. A bunch of people had their lights on. I figured, what the hell? And then, bam!
God, I love that.
My reward.
I completely love that.
Oh, my God. So do I. And to the girls listening in the navy blue Toyota Camry, thank you, ladies.
Now, Chad, if you were listening to KNRK in the afternoon, would you be getting bare breasts out there?
No, I would not. And that's why I listen to you, brother man.
What about KXL? Would you be getting bare breasts listening to KXL?
No, they're all Christians, so I would guess no.
You know how KXL got their call letters? That's the size of the women who listen to KXL. They're all XL.
I would just call it KXXL.
That's right. KXXL. Is that also in Oregon? It probably is.
Well, we got a lot of big beauties there, definitely.
like to think.
I understand. Well, Chad, thank you so much for reporting in. I appreciate it.
All right, so there you go. So it was worth it.
I thought he was going to work in an AM 970.
No, sadly he didn't, but it was worth it for the KXL reference there. All right, take a break. You'll come back after this. Dennis Pitzenberger here. Like is coming up in just a few minutes, actually, 3 o'clock. Donna Mike at 7. He said it's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.
The message is, Mars needs women.
We interrupt this record to bring you a special bulletin. The reports of a flying saucer hovering over the city have been confirmed.
When are you going to see Justin Timberlake?
Well, you know, my wife is a huge fan, and I am
marrying a 12-year-old.
No, she's 25.
Uh-huh. She's not 25.
She's 25.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I'll be 37 this year. Thank you. That's 3 o'clock. Tom Likas.
Same age difference my parents had.
Yeah. No, my wife is a huge fan, and I have to give credit to Justin Timberlake. If he wasn't singing those songs, Michael Jackson would be.
Yeah.
But, no, I'll be dragged to the Justin Timberlake concert. I'm curious. I don't know whether I'm going to wear, like, my leather jacket from riding my Harley.
Like, you're going to try to look all tough at the Justin Timberlake show?
Or I think I just might just go cash. I don't know. I'm going to end up being in a sea of 12-year-olds. I know that. As you put it.
Yeah. Rick, you should call the show Tranny Rick. Conversely, this email says, I think the worst show title ever would be Hot to Squat. You figure out what the premise is. I don't even know what the premise is, dude. And I don't want to know.
There's a 2 in front of that name. Re-say it.
Coming up, Hot to Squat. That's pretty great. I got all this crap here. All right, well, what's coming up on the... You got a bunch of car... Well, you have, what's his name?
Chip Foosball.
Whatever.
We have Chip Foos on this weekend. He is probably the best builder. All the shows that you see on Discovery, TLC, all that, is called Overhaul, and he's a really famous big name in the automotive industry. We're going to have him on this weekend, and I'm going to hit like 3 car reviews this weekend. The Volvo S80, the BMW X3, and a little cool rig. I just drove the Mazda CX-7, which is kind of a cool little SUV this weekend.
So excellent.
Please join us. It's milesaround.com.
Saturdays 9 to 11, immediately preceded by Car and Driver Radio, which is 6 to 9 a.m. All right. Rick Emerson show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah Exilin for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, it's Tim Riley, and the PA is Scotty J. The gatekeeper is Dave Zinn. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Lisa Goddard and Jim Roop. Join us tomorrow on the Rick Emerson show at 11 a.m., preceded by Dennis Miller, 8 to 11, and Stephanie Miller, 6 to 8. As always, my friends, don't let the bastards grind you down, and do try to help the retarded. I raised $24 for the Special Olympics today. What did you do? See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
Where's the beat?